Boom, and we're live with my pal Vinny Shorman and 8-time world Muay Thai champion Liam Harrison.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Fuck yeah, dude. Yeah. Great to be here. Great to see you guys,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we love it.
Listen, man, I'm a big fan of all combat sports, but I really believe that if there's one sport that doesn't get its due, it's Muay Thai. I really don't understand why it hasn't taken off in America. I don't get it. I love boxing. Boxing's a lot of fun. I think Muay Thai is twice as fun.
Yeah, it's twice as hard as well, I think. I mean, I fought pro boxing and I've had over 100 Muay Thai fights. It's definitely a lot harder. I mean, it is getting more mainstream now along with the MMA because most of the top MMA fighters are doing Muay Thai for the stand-up, but it's still not where it needs to be and nowhere near.
It's weird, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think what puts a lot of people off Muay Thai is the maybe the two-minute break. And also the
two-minute break in between rounds?
Yeah, and the traditional music and stuff like that. People find that hard to take too, really, which is... I mean, I love it, so I don't see that problem, but I can see outside the box with that as well. So.
Well, I feel like the two-minute break gives guys more of a chance to recover, which makes the fights more exciting. You have more energy. And I don't care about the dance, the Y crew. That doesn't bother me.
Yeah, but you're a fan, aren't you? You're a martial arts fan. I mean, to sit down and watch
But watch baseball. Baseball's so fucking boring.
Exactly.
It's crazy how boring it is.
A lot of shows in England now, they've started to cut out all the traditional stuff. There's no Ramu, no Y Crew. You just get in the ring, you face off, bell goes, go straight away. So they're trying to cut little aspects of it out just to make it more media, fan-friendly, really.
Yeah, we should probably explain to people that don't know what we're talking about, though. The dance that they do, it's called the Y Crew, right?
Yeah, the Ramu.
And it's what is the headband that they put on? What is that?
The Mongkong.
That's the Mongkong. Yeah. And when you're doing the dance, the idea is like to warm up.
Yeah, there's lots of different different reasons why. There's different camps believe different things. It's to do, mainly to do with Buddhism. You're sealing the ring and then taking, you know, playing respect to your gym, your coaches, your parents, etc. Isn't it, Liam?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy doing it. It sort of prepares me mentally for what's about to happen. I've done it in nearly all my 108 fights. Only the odd one or two where I've missed it. When that's only been because I've been told by the promoters, right, no wrong way. I enjoy doing it, but like Vinny said, like some people who come to watch it, they just want to see fights. They don't want to see that aspect of the sport as well. They just want to see people getting torn up.
And in case anybody didn't catch that through that dense accent, he just said 108 fights. That's fucking crazy, man. That's a lot of fights.
It is for a Westerner, but like a lot of the Thais I'm coming across, there are 200, 300 plus. I remember last year I fought a Thai, and they said, oh, Liam's had 100 fights. That is a lot. What do you think? And he said, I'd had 100 fights when I was 15 years old.
Wow. Yeah.
That was Singh Damu who said that about it. So,
100 fights when he was 15. How is that even possible?
I'm not sure.
He must have been fighting every week. Yeah, 52 weeks a year.
Well, it's a living, isn't it? So
yeah.
If they don't eat, they don't. In Thailand, if you don't fight, you don't eat. So see ya. There's no welfare or anything like that, so they have to do that.
I had a former UFC champion Pat Miletic in yesterday, and we were talking about Muay Thai and how crazy it is that this one place, Thailand, developed this completely effective style. Like, they changed the way people fight. Yeah. I mean, they really did.
Yeah, they did.
If you look at all the other martial arts, whether it's karate or kung fu or anything else, like, they figured it out.
Yeah, without a doubt. But what's happening now is, as well, the Westerners are starting to catch them up now. I mean, remember the first time I went to Thailand, not many people were going and not many people knew about fighting that Thai way. More and more Westerners now are going to live there. They're staying there for long periods of time. They're getting it down, and we can compete with the top-level Thais now.
Wow.
Before, like, back in the day, there might have been, like, only Ramon Dekker, Danny Beal, obviously John Wayne Parr, them guys.
Yeah, Ronnie Green as well from England.
Yeah, Ronnie Green from England. But now there's a lot, especially around Europe, French fighters, top-level British guys. We've got Danny McGowan in England. He's doing it. I mean, we are starting to really compete with people on top level now.
Is Muay Thai more popular in Europe than it is in America?
Yeah. There's massive shows on in Europe every weekend.
Really?
I mean, in America, there's like the main one's Lion Fight. We've got like two or three huge promotions in England now. Yokao, there's Tanko. The French, they have massive shows on every weekend with top level fighters on. All over Poland and everywhere, he's getting huge.
I'm a big fan of Lion Fight, but it seems to me that there's a lot of times where these guys come over and they're fighting someone that really doesn't belong in there with them. And you get to see like a Lurdzilla or something like that.
That would be absolutely ridiculous.
That fight,
the guy's
crazy.
First fight against the guy who's had 400 fights, like one of the best Thai champions of this era.
And his first ever professional Muay Thai fight.
Look what happened, he got his head ripped off.
Yeah. That's the difference between Yokao and everything else, you know? Mm-hmm. they do it in such a way that the matchmaking, Brian Calder, who does the matchmaking, our friend, the fights are like really, really always competitive, which I really enjoy.
And you've been doing commentary for them for how long?
I've been doing commentary for Yokao since 2011. I met Stefania in when I was working for It Showtime. And she asked me to work for them.
I still have some of the old It's Showtime on my old... I have a DVR right. in my gym that's okay. like fucking 10 years old. And I still have your voice.
Right.
Yeah, screaming out over some pitch.
I'm sorry about that.
It's great.
You know what? As I was going to say, as I've matured, but after the shenanigans we've got up to in the past, you'd be surprised. But no, it's you know, Yokao's gone from strength to strength. You know, and It's Showtime offshoots like Glory and Fusion, who I work for now. You know, they're so healthy at the minute.
Yeah.
So healthy, kickboxing and Muay Thai.
Well, it's so high level. Yeah. It's just, to me, I mean, I've sat down and thought about this alone by myself for hours on end, trying to think, like, what would be the way to get Muay Thai more popular in America? Because me, as a person who loves combat sports, I look at Muay Thai and I'm like, this is the pinnacle of striking sports. It's the most exciting to me. I like the clinch. I like the elbows. I love kickboxing. I love Glory. But I feel like there's something missing with that. Like just the stuff that you were showing me today with all the trips and the sweeps and all that stuff that's eliminated from Glory.
The thing is with Liam as well, though, because he's got a fan-friendly style. You know, he's not particularly a clincher, but he's crash, bang, wallop in 150 mile an hour. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, I'm his biggest fan. I mean, if you listen to the commentary, it's totally 100% biased. And I don't fucking care. No, I love the kid, you know what I mean? I've known him since he was 15.
I'm on my backup floor, and he's like, look how well he's lying down. Oh, he's doing it great.
He wear them anklets mashing, he does. But, you know, for me, it's his style that makes it exciting, you know?
Yes.
And I think that, with the TV thing, I think... to get it more popular, you need to pick and choose what fights you're putting on the TV, I think.
Yeah.
If you just put, like, a random show on with, like, three, like, fights that are terrible but one's okay, you need to, instead of it being live, maybe, like, pick and choose some good fights, get it out there, get people talking about it, make them think, wow, did you see that? Did you see them elbows? Did you see all that blood? See them sweeps? That's what I think. Yeah. That's what I do personally, but...
I feel like if a network like Fox took a chance and had one Saturday night and they promoted it and they, we're going to show you the most dangerous stand-up strikers on the planet Earth. Like, you might think that professional boxers are the most dangerous strikers, but they literally wouldn't last two rounds. They'd get their legs kicked out from under them. They'd get kneed in the body and elbowed in the face. They'd get cut up and clinched and thrown to the ground. It's just a better style of fighting. And a guy like you on TV would be a whole lot of fun. I'm a big fan of the way you fight, man. You fight like you got rabies.
It's like what Vinny said. I've always had that type of style. But you know what? Sometimes I've probably lost fights on points because of wanting to go for the kill when probably if I'd have changed my game plan, I probably could have won. But that's just not what I'm about. I get in there and people coming to watch me fight and paying their hard-earned money to come and watch me fight. They want to see me smash someone's leg. They want to see me knock someone out. They want to see, even if it goes a distance, they want to see me put it all in there. And people are paying their money for that. So I feel like I've got a moral obligation to give them that. I mean, I can fight technical as well. I've had lots of fights in the past where I've just gone in with that game set and I've schooled top-level fighters. But I don't like doing that. I want to get in there and I want to
I don't like you doing that either. I'm not going to be, you know.
You don't like when he fights technical?
Listen, he can't do any wrong in my eyes. You know what I mean? He can't, you know what I mean? Oh, Liam's killed the family for nothing. Oh, they must have done something to upset him. But I just think that, you know, his style, the way that the show that I work on regularly, Yoka, I mean, to have that level of, it's matchmaking. See, yeah. Muay Thai is like anything. If it's done well, it's beautiful. If it's done badly, it's
right.
It's
including boxing. One of the reasons why we were talking about the Gennady Golovkin Canelo Alvarez fight. I mean, one of the reasons why we're so looking forward to the fight, not just because the first fight was so great, because stylistically, look at the way those two guys fight. Like, how could this be a bad fight? It's impossible.
They can't. Now they're both saying they're going to both change different game plans and stuff, and it's got everyone thinking again. Oh well, what is going to happen this time?
There's no change. Someone's going to get hit, and it's going to be guns blazing.
Team GGG.
Yeah.
Team GGG. We've been to hunt him.
We were looking for him the other day at Big Bear.
Yeah, guys went stalking like fangirls.
100%.
Sat in a restaurant where he eats. Where he came over and said, oh, what would you like? I went, oh, I'll have what GGG has, please.
Yeah, it's true. It's
GGG special.
Yeah. And when we was in there, we were sat there, and Liam was like across from me, and I went, there's Tom Loeffler. And he went, who's it? I went, it's GGG's manager. And they were getting all chairs out and stuff, setting these chairs out for. And I thought, he's going to arrive.
I couldn't eat my food. I got so excited. I pushed my plate away. I'm like, I can't eat.
He's going to be here any moment now.
And we were sat there for ages and he didn't turn up.
Well,
but we met Freddie Roach the day before.
Freddie Roach is a sweetheart.
What a guy.
He's a real sweetheart.
He took us down and let us watch sparring and stuff. And we were like,
yeah,
but it wasn't even that. He's like stood with us for like half an hour. We were talking about boxing. He was like interested in when I were fighting and stuff like that. He didn't have to be like that. Do you know what I mean? And I bet he gets people walking in there all the time, like wanting to meet him and stuff. But he took time out talking to Vinny about all different other types of fights. Let us watch some top level fighters spar, and he was like really interested.
Yeah,
like,
great guy,
absolute legend.
He's very genuine. Yeah. I got to interview him back when he was training George St. Pierre when George St. Pierre was under him, and he's just as down to earth as you or any, just a regular guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
It was over the moon to meet you.
And man, talk about a guy who's been around the world and seen it all. That guy. Training Pacquiao and fuck, man.
And you know what? I thought he said something about, I don't know whether Pacquiao's going to train with him for this fight. And he kind of likes, and he was so engaging and endearing about Pacquiao, wasn't he? Saying, oh, Pacquiao plays basketball, even though he's been with him 16 years. And he's just gone, oh, well, if he goes and does something else or he finds another trainer, he was like, oh, well, he likes basketball. Yeah. It's just a.
He don't give a fuck. He's got money. He doesn't give a shit. And, you know, I mean, his health has been such an issue over the last few years. He has trauma-related Parkinson's, which has got to be very interesting when you're, you know, training fighters and you realize, like, you're suffering from fighting yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just meeting him, that's made my whole trip, meeting him and just seeing how grounded and down-to-earth he is. I honestly just couldn't believe it.
Have you gone to Wild Card Gym yet?
Yeah, that's where we went.
That's where we went. We watched what were his name? George Camboso Jr.?
Yeah, the kid from Australia.
Watch out for
good
him,
guy.
14-0.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Sharp. He's,
yeah,
really
next
sharp.
Big
and
thing from Australia,
well.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's crazy, too, when you go up to that gym, you hear so much about it, you're like, yeah, it's about as big as this room.
Yeah, it's true.
It's not a big fucking gym.
We were sweating and all sorts, weren't we, on the way up?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a legendary spot, you know?
Yeah, it's a great place.
So you're in America doing some seminars.
Yeah. Fire, Fury, Focus seminars. Vinny's doing all his NLP mind coaching stuff for an hour and a half, and then I take over and do all the physical aspects, Muay Thai, all the little tricks and sweeps, some of the stuff that I was showing you there, stuff that I've used throughout my career to help me get to where I am.
And NLP is neuro-linguistic programming, is that what you're doing?
Yeah, NLP, but it's mainly to language and things, tricks that I've put up from over the years. Not all NLP, you know, it's a little bit of hypnosis, hypnotic language, blah, blah, blah. So.
Right.
And it gets them in a learning state. So what I do is I prepare them in a learning state, give them confidence, build them up so they can start to take on what Liam teaches. So it's a double whammy, really. So he teaches some brilliant techniques, as you're aware. And then I just do my bit to get them where they have to get to.
Before I met you, I thought that hypnosis was for idiots. I thought you'd have to be a dummy. I'm like, yeah, you ain't getting me with that shit.
Sam.
And then when you hypnotized me, I was like, wait a minute, this is real? Wow. But I tried to explain it to me, to people. You know, I'm like, it's not what you think. It's not like you don't know where you are, you don't know what's going on, all of a sudden your pants are off. It's not like that. It's like you achieve this weird state of mind that you're aware
of. You do it.
Yes.
Yeah, all I do is guide it. You do it. And then the client does it, like whether I do it with you or actors. We've got an actor friend called Mike Parr, I've been working with, who loves it, and Warren Brown, people.
Does he use it to help his acting?
Yeah, he did. He mentioned me on a program called This Morning, which is a daytime show in England, and he went on it. He's in a soap opera called Emmerdale. He's known Liam a long time and known me less time because I'm not in that.
He's your biggest fan, by the way.
Yeah,
biggest fan.
What's up, Mike?
Yeah, what's up, Mike?
There you go. Met his year.
Yeah. So yeah, and I've done work with him, and since I'm going on your show, which I really do appreciate it, because my work's gone from a businesswoman of the year, CEOs, and everyone now it's just gone crazy because. They needed a convincer, and you was it, so thanks very much.
Well, it's legit. I'll tell you right now. I mean, I don't know about other people, but you know how to do it.
Thank you.
Like, and it gave me some very interesting understanding about the mind and thought processes and how it works. And that expression that you like to use all the time, hakalau.
Hakalau.
I think about that. Explain what that is to people.
Hakalau is it's increasing your peripheral vision. It's increasing your awareness just by basically cutting off your chitter chatter that goes on in your mind. If you see Liam when he fights, before he fights, he pushes his gloves together and goes into Hackladders every single time. What that does, when I haven't shown you that yet, but I will show you later on if you wish, is you anchor the gloves. So you anchor a positive state in the gloves and you push them together and you find Hackalow and it just gets you in a well. You can explain it.
What's unique about these seminars is why I wanted to do them is because I've worked with him myself before and all the stuff that he's teaching, and not, I know it works myself. First time I used Vinny, it's the story how it all started. I fought a top level Thai called Anuak Khao Samrit, in nickname with Iron Hands of Siam. He had like an 80% KO ratio, and I went to fight him in Jamaica. I knew I could beat him, but there were a few aspects that just didn't go right with training. It didn't go right at the time.
Jackson died.
Threw him off.
Honestly, he did. I'm not going to lie.
Really?
That fucked my shit up.
Really? It fucked you up when Michael Jackson died?
Oh, yeah, I'm a massive fan. Everyone who knows me knows I'm a massive fan.
We like that. He's out of my life. Yeah.
But I'm not blaming Michael Jackson for losing that fight, listen.
But you really were. You were a massive Michael Jackson fan.
Massive, yeah.
Did you ever come out to his fights? You ever walk
smooth
out
criminal,
music?
Bad guy. Yeah, of course. I fought this Thai champion in Jamaica. Like I said, a few things didn't go right, and he smashed me to pieces. It was the first time I ever got stopped. I knew I could beat him, though. I'm good at reading fighters. I knew I could beat him. So I begged and begged and begged for the rematch, and promoter brought it about 6-7 months later, brought him to England. MEN Arena, massive show, biggest show the country's ever seen. And Vinny had spoke to me before in the past, said, do you ever want to do a little bit of work? And I was like, I'm mentally strong. I don't need to, but to build up to that fight, I thought, you know what? I'm going to train as hard as I've ever done before anyway, but there's no point. You can never be too prepared. Right. So I said, oh, Vinny, can we do a little bit? And we did loads of different techniques, and we had, like, key words, like warrior were one of them.
The warrior was the main one.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, now, the reason why Liam was reluctant to work with me is the first time he met me, I stole a wheelchair, drunk. I didn't steal it. I didn't tip anyone who was disabled out of the wheelchair, just for everyone at home.
Fucking Brits.
I know, but I was drunk at a show at Leeds Town Hall. I'm sure his coach, Richard Smith, remembers, or Lisa. And anyway, so it was a reluctant because I like to mess about. You know, I like to be silly, etc., you know. But he came to me and we worked together. And my take on this story is, I was commentating at the time with a great guy called Rob Cox, who lives in Thailand, who knows everything about Muay Thai. Rob Cox knows everything.
Everything.
Everything. He's the king. Simple. And I was commentating with him. Now, Liam came to me and I wanted to put a word in that would keep him strong, so it was warrior. Now, what was really weird, as I was commentating on you can watch it on YouTube, when I'm commentating on the fight, he looks at me at round four, because I can see him, and he looks through his trainer, Richard Smith, and Andy House, and his cousin, who's a five-time world champion as well, so it's in a family. And he looks over at me, and he goes, warrior. He looks straight in my eyes.
I don't even remember doing that either. It was like the state I was in when I was fighting, he couldn't hurt me. Bearing in mind how badly he smashed me to pieces in the first fight, I didn't get hurt with anything. It was like I was in some total state. I was so on point. I'm making him miss. I schooled him, really. I beat him pretty convincingly on points.
That's amazing.
And I went to the after party afterwards. I had a bottle of water, sat down, passed out, collapsed. Ambulance came and got me, took me to hospital. I had a really bad concussion.
Wow.
But it just goes like the state I was in the fight, and I didn't feel a thing. Everything just had my eyes. I didn't feel anything. It was weird. I can't, it was hard to explain.
You get so emotionally invested in it as well. That when he, because you know I'm his biggest fan, when he came over, he said thank you. I was like,
it was my dad's birthday that day as well. So there were a lot. It was like my dad's birthday.
I know his dad and his family and that. And I was so overwhelmed by it. But look, I mean, it's only one aspect of it. He's got a fantastic coach in Richard Smith and Lisa Horton, Lisa Smith, Lisa, should we call Horton? Lisa, and all the gangs like Jordan, Badger, you know, Andy, everyone, Steve Campbell, his strength and conditioning. He's got so many people around him. I'm just one little bit. But it was weird because he went warrior. And I said to him, do you remember saying warrior? He went, no.
Yeah, I didn't remember it at all. I had to look back at the video and watch it.
The concussion probably had a lot to do with that.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. I look back at the video and there's a left hook in round four. My head nearly like goes, woo, spins round.
I think that was the one.
That probably it, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that that's catching on, mental coaching. Yeah. It really is. And there's a lot of fighters that used to dismiss it that I know now are using mental coaches. I've had conversations with them before in the past, and I was like, what do you think about sports psychologists? What do you think about mental coaches? I don't need that shit. And then years later, a loss or two later, their mind's in a weird place, and then they decide, okay, I need something like that.
Yeah, it's, the thing is, I think that fights are won and lost in the changing rooms. I think that in the locker room, as you say, you know, one little, it's like a tiny bit of anthrax thrown in a reservoir of poison a whole city. And I think that's what it does mentally.
I've seen fighters in the dressing room who I've trained with in the gym, and they have been so strong, had so much power in the gym, they've been the best ever. And I've seen them in the changing rooms, and I've seen them start to go to themselves, oh, it's going to be hard, this, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's strong, him, innit? And I can see him just starting to deflate and change. Yeah. And a lot of fighters do have that problem. And
dwarfed by the moment.
Yeah.
That's a common thing with everything.
It's anxiety.
With any kind of performance, anything where you're doing something that's difficult. But fighting has such dire physical consequences that the overwhelming anxiety and the pressure, just you see it so many times, guys who are really good fighters, that they have panic attacks in the dressing room. They just can't handle
it's like interviews as well. I mean, you get such a diverse mix of clients that it's everything. It's what it means to you, isn't it? So that your fight could be against whoever the hardest fighters, Thai boxers in the world, that they keep matching you with, and your job or your interview or you, like Mikey, the lines that you have to do or your show, I think it's all relative to you, you know, when anxiety is a big scourge.
Yeah, anytime you have to do anything difficult, anxiety comes into play.
It does.
But it just doesn't come into play in anything remotely, except war. It's like war is like the highest level of it. And then you get below that is like probably police officers and, you know, first responders. Yeah. Then it's fighters.
Indeed.
It's like there's nothing like it. That walk to the fucking ring, you know, I mean, and you're just thinking about, did I do enough? Did I sleep enough? Did I eat right? You know?
Yeah. And you see it. I see so many. I think that's why I've kind of got into it as well, you know, with different things. I saw so much potential. See, one of the first times I met him, I was training someone to fight him.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, right, listen, he's only a kid. So what you got to do, get in his face and punch him in the face hard. As often as you can, he'll soon quit. How wrong was I?
They're only 15.
How old was the other guy?
28.
Oh, Jesus.
What was his name?
Mark Castellane.
Mark from Liverpool, yeah.
You fought a fucking 28-year-old when you were 15?
I fight at 65 kilo now. My first fight were at 60 kilo when I was 14, so I've always been big for my age. And then when I got to 15, I just stopped growing. So when I was 14, I had like a beard and I looked like a Yeti and all sorts. And I was big in school. So I was having to fight a lot older people. I was having to fight men. And so I was like, when I was 14, one of my first fights without any protection on, I had to fight a 28-year-old. And I went my first 29 pro fights, all unbeaten. It wasn't until I fought a Thai champion. And I got a bit of an hiding, called Duel, that I realised, I have to change up my game plan here and have to go to Thailand and like learn how they do it.
What is the difference when you train in England versus when you train in Thailand and how they fight? What is the difference?
Well, over there, I stayed there for about 18 months in Thailand, and I just lived in the gym like the Thais did. So we woke up in the morning, we went running, came back, bit of pad work, bit of clinch. Not too intense in the morning, but then the afternoon session, 3 in the afternoon, the scorching hot heat, 3 till 6. I mean, most classes in England, there might be, an hour and a half. This was 3 hours, intense.
You kick second workout of the day.
Yeah. So you're skipping for half an hour, straight off of that, straight on the pads, 7-8 rounds, straight off of that, straight into sparring, straight off of that, straight into clinching with the Thais. And anyone who knows how strong the Thais are, clinching as well, it was absolute torture every single day. But I loved it, and I don't think without doing that, I don't think I'd have been able to compete with the top-level Thais that I have done. Now, though, how much Richard has progressed with my gym in England, I feel like we've got so many top-level fighters now that who are at that level, I feel like I don't have to go over there and do it anymore.
Mm.
We've got the stable in Bad Company now. We've got the knowledge. We've got the experience. We've got the Andy House and Jordan Watson, young Joe Craven coming through. We've got all these strong animals in the gym that we're probably one of – well, we are. We have been one of the best gyms in Europe for a long time now.
Now, do you work out the same amount of time? Do you do a morning session and then do a 3-hour afternoon session too?
Yeah, so what I'll do in the morning, I'll go down and probably do kick pads with my boss, Richard, and then maybe a bit of play sparring with Jordan or a run. So then in the evening, I've got PTs all day in between this, though. That's the only difference.
Personal training?
Yeah. I teach as well, like full-time. Right. So I might have 5 hours of PTs to do in between all this. So
that's exhausting.
Yeah, it is.
Especially the way you teach.
Yeah.
You get very intense.
I like to be hands-on and I like to get involved. And it is tiring. I just have to make sure like my diet's on point with stuff like that, because if I have a day where I eat shit and then I'm exhausted and right. I can't get the most out of my second training session. And then I get to 5 o'clock, I'll go run again, kick pads again, and that's when Richard will do like...
So you run twice in a day?
Some days.
Wow.
I don't run far though. I'll do more 5Ks, but fast. Mm-hmm. The way I see it with Muay Thai, it's explosive stuff. So I do more hill sprints and more sprint work than actual long distance. The only time I do my really long distance is if I need to drop my weight down drastically. But when you're fighting 5 3-minute rounds, it's not a long time. It's like, bam, bam, bang, bam, bam, bang. So I do more explosive work, like hill sprints with my strength coach and stuff like that, and plyometric explosive workouts. That's the only thing that's missing in Thailand, really, the strength and conditioning. But a lot of gyms out there now are getting hold of that and changing up their...
Like, Super Pro's doing it where I go with Robbie Timmers and Sharoon, who's trained, like I just said, that Alistair Overeem's over there, and Badder. And Badder's been there a few times. A lot of the Dutch go over there in Koh Samui, and they've got a CrossFit place now. They've got like a new sort of MetaFit place.
Yeah, so Yokao as well. They've got it going on now.
Yokao Center as well.
I think, and a lot of them.
A lot of them are catching up, you know, and you know, doing it over there as well. So they're kind of catching up. I know that Bam Chamek, I know that Bukau does a lot of strength and conditioning. And
he looks like he does a lot of it.
Yeah, he does.
I was at his last fight against Johnny Risco, and he lost. Johnny Risco was amazing that night. He was just on him. Didn't give him any rest. But
how long ago was this?
Last week, wasn't it? Last week.
How old's Bukau now?
35. He's coming to the twilight now. Yeah.
He's a legend, though.
Yeah, he is. Legendary. I got a chance to see him fight in L.A.
Yeah.
When they had, they've had some fights. They tried to do some pay-per-view events and stuff like that out here. It's just for whatever reason, it never caught on.
Yeah, we did a Muay Thai in America.
When Andy fought.
Yeah, Andy fought twice on it. That's how
They were good shows, them as well.
Wicked shows.
All real good fights.
Yeah, they were wicked shows. That's why I met Brian Doble, who's our friend who's looked after us here. And
Fontana, California in the house.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Double dose. That's where our seminar is on Saturday, our last one. And it's a shame because we love it here, don't we? Yeah. We don't want to go home.
I really wish I could figure out a way to get it to catch on. I just don't understand what's wrong.
It is getting there with the MMA and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember the first time I ever fought main event on a show in England and I got like paid like this much. But now I'm like headlining shows and I'm getting paid like up there now. So there's a lot of people are saying, it's going nowhere.
He's bringing that mic in front of you.
I've watched it like go from there right to where it is now in my career, and where it's come from is massive. It's massive gap from where it was. Mm-hmm. And if it does keep going like this, it will eventually get there, but it's just slowly, slowly, slowly.
We've always seen much more Muay Thai talent come out of England and out of Europe than we have out of America, for whatever reason. There's been some standout fighters in America, but it's the big shows. There's like a lot of big shows in Europe, and that's just really never been the case here.
Yeah, I mean, like Yokao is the one now. Everyone wants to fight on Yokao. I'm nothing to do with the promotion. I'm just a Yokao fighter, and I get people messaging me all the time. Oh, how do I get to fight on Yokao? Who do I contact? And I mean, hundreds of messages all the time of people asking. Like, everyone does. That's the show that everyone wants, to be honest. The biggest, outside of the main stadium ones in Thailand, the biggest in the world by a country mile.
Do they do internet pay-per-view?
No, they don't. And I think that's something they should look at.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, I've said this for ages.
Yeah, because I think, even though it's big, it's small, if that makes sense, in numbers that come to the show. It's like 3,000 or something like that, which isn't massive, but it's always jam-packed. And I think it's, when you're selling tickets for a show, people say, oh, well, I can buy it for like £5 and sit at home and watch it instead.
I think there should be an international, maybe Geoblock.
Geoblock, because I know that Infusion do that, who I work for.
Geoblock, what do you mean?
Yeah, that means that you can't watch it in your country.
But everywhere else, worldwide. But if you think about everyone in America.
So that people will go to see it.
So you buy tickets.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. So where does it air? Does it air on television? Like,
no, they bring the, we do the show, and then they put the fights out, and they kind of feed the fights out over YouTube. I think they may put it on their Facebook page or their.
But the fights on that show, I mean, every single fight is a war. Every single fight could headline any show around the world.
We have got some right kids coming through. I'm a massive fan of Stuart.
There's never a boring show, is there?
No.
Like, ever.
And even when Liam's not on it, which is, obviously the highlight for me, because he's my mate, and he brings thunder, doesn't he? He's a storm. But we've got some new kids coming through that are just. Like I just mentioned, Stuart Stabler and these Joe Craven and these kids coming through that are just, and watched him taking on his style and taking on their own style, and there's some real dangerous kids coming through.
Now, I would imagine with your style, it's your style is so physically intensive and so aggressive that, like, how well do you monitor your diet?
I have to do with when I'm close to a fight. If I don't, like I say, I'm gonna have no energy.
And do you cut weight?
Yeah, I used to cut a lot more than I do now. I might do about 8 pounds now, but I might start the fight camp and be only 10 pounds over.
That's nothing crazy.
No, not a lot at all. My last 4 or 5 fights, the day before the weigh-in, I've been on weight without having to get in the sauna or without having to go run in the sweatsuit or anything like that. As I've got older, I've got wiser.
Yeah. Just realize it was draining you too much?
Yeah, of course, especially as I got older. When I was younger, I could get away with it. I might be able to get in the sauna and lose like 3-4 kilo at the weigh-in and still get in there and knock someone out or stop someone. But I had a few mistakes as I got older as well, growing, where I missed weight, and it made me just think, what am I doing here? Get on point with it. Because as soon as you start to do stuff like that, promoters don't want to work with you.
Right.
You get a bad rep. And this were about 7-8 years ago now, and I haven't done it since. I've made sure I've been on point with everything. To be honest, it's down to me, my missus a lot as well. She looks after me. She goes out and works hard all day, but whenever I get in from gym about 7-8 o'clock, there's healthy food there for me and stuff.
What kind of food do you eat? Do you specify? I mean, not do you really. Have like
a lot of people cut out carbs and stuff. I'm training so hard and sweating all day and burning so much calories in my PTs and stuff. I don't need to cut out my carbs.
That's a big factor. Like, people need to understand that when they're talking about low carb diets, it really depended upon how much exercise you do.
Yeah.
If you're running twice a day and you're doing 3-hour workouts in the afternoon, like, you're going to need some carbohydrates.
Yeah, exactly. I don't need to cut them out. Even in the last week, a lot of people have been saying, oh, last week, fight camp, weigh-in's coming up, I need to cut my carbs out. I'll still get up in the morning and have a massive bowl of porridge. I'll still have rice for my dinner and my fish and my salad and stuff like that as well. I don't need to cut it out. But like I said, that's down to how much work I'm doing and stuff like that. Yeah.
The amount you're burning. I mean, Jesus Christ, the amount of calories you must be burning.
Well,
that's
I had my watch on the other day, and I think I'd done something like almost nearly 5,000 or something ridiculous. And
5,000 calories.
I wore it all day from my training and my PTs and stuff like that.
That's insane. Yeah. Just think about eating 5,000 calories a day.
Yeah, exactly. You can't. Yeah, yeah. You can't.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, do you limit the amount of personal training you do? Because
If I'm not got a fight coming up, I'll only train once a day just to keep sharp and keep on top of my game. I might be able to do 7 hours, like, no problem. And but as the fight gets closer and closer, I'll cut down and cut down and cut down, because obviously I don't want my body being tired. I need to be. I've got a lot to lose every time I fight. This is a brand now with these seminars and stuff as well, so I need to make sure I'm going in there as on point as I can be.
So you think about it that way. You think about it as, like, you're basically a business.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And I've got a lot riding on it every time I fight. I think there has been for a long time now. I mean, like, all the country gets behind me, but there's a lot of player haters out there as well who want to see me lose, and they love it when I lose. And
tell me who they are. I will hunt them down with your bow.
Well, there's no getting around that, man. If you're doing well, there's going to be people that
exactly,
hate you.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of it, really, they just hate themselves. That's really what
there
it is.
There you go. I mean,
perception
they
look is at projection.
What it is is they see someone who's out there who's exceptional, and it makes them compare their own life to this guy who's out there smashing everybody with 108 fights, and they go, fuck that guy. He's a pussy.
I put a video on me kicking the pads the other day, and I got about 4 or 5, well, I probably got loads more than that, actually, but there were 4 or 5 comments that I noticed saying, kicking that wrong. I thought, I'll just click on the profile, just have a look at them. They're all just selfies of themselves eating chocolate bars, and one of them with a dog. They're all about 175 kilos.
Someone told you that you're kicking wrong?
Yeah,
and
we put a video up the other day. I was holding boxing pads for Liam while he's out here. I just hold boxing pads.
I saw that.
And
holy
someone
shit.
Said, yeah, you're dropping your left hand. I was like, all right then. Thanks, fucking and Sugar Ray Leonard.
If you ever have a fight, you're going to get knocked out.
Oh,
what
God.
Do you mean if I ever have a fight?
It's a 109th fight. It's just hilarious that someone would actually say to you that you're kicking wrong. Like, if anybody, all my friends out there that get flustered by people criticizing them on social media, I want to point them to that.
Yeah.
Liam fucking Harrison, someone's telling him that he's kicking wrong. That makes me want to cry. I'm laughing so hard. That's how fucking stupid some people are. But that just shows you that when you have an open forum where anyone can comment, anyone can say something, you're going to run into a certain amount of those people. There's just no getting around it.
Yeah, definitely.
You just can't can't look at the comments. You know, you can't read that shit. You just
get assassinated from all corners.
Well, the thing is, those people, they might not even mean what they're saying. They're it's verbal diarrhea. They're just blah. They're just angry. They're upset.
Yeah. The thing is, though, even if I looked at someone's video and I thought their technique weren't on point or anything like that, I wouldn't even go on and write it. I mean,
of course, what
gives you the right to go on and like try and put someone down as putting some? Do you know what I mean?
Of course, if it was a competitor or someone like that, yeah. And you know, if maybe someone's getting undue accolades,
yeah,
and you're like, this ain't shit, yeah, you know, or if someone you're supposed to fight.
Not when you're like 420 pounds sat around just eating burgers all day, it's ridiculous, do you know what I mean?
Bet he can eat more than you, though.
Good point.
Maybe not. You need 5,000 fucking calories, man. You know,
it's true.
I've sit down with some fighters and you watch them eat and you're like, where the fuck is all that going? You know? I mean, there's very few things in life that burn off more calories than throwing kicks. Mm. You know, and especially the way you throw them. And I'm like, like that. This the amount of fucking energy you're generating.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm on the pads and stuff, every training session I put 100% in, especially when I'm on the pads.
Your pad work is fucking awesome to watch. It's very inspirational. It's very fun.
Obviously, as well with that, that's just a little clip of what I'm doing on the pads. I mean, my old pad work ain't just me sometimes it's just me trying to smash the pads to pieces, but obviously there's a lot more technical aspects to it. Now, that's just like a little clip where I'll look through what someone's filming and go, oh, that was good, so I'll put it up.
Right.
But obviously there's bits where Richard's stopping me and putting me right what I'm doing wrong, technique, working the game plan and stuff like that. They're obviously just little snippets that I just put up of me doing things wrong, apparently. But that's obviously there's a sparring and all the different technical side to it as well as that. But I mean, that is like my style, but I don't fight totally just like that, just smash, smash, smash. You've got to be smart about it, especially at the level I fight at. If I just started smashing things like that, I'm just going to walk onto a shot. That's that level, it's going to be game over.
Yeah, there's no way. Now, do you, in between fights, do you train with people that have other styles or different styles, like maybe some Kyokushin guys or someone who's doing something different?
I train a lot of MMA fighters at the minute. I've got quite a lot of guys coming to me. I've been doing a bit of work with Mark Diakisi from the UFC. He's been training me a little bit. He's out in Florida now, training there. There's a gym in Leeds where I'm from called AVT. It's like a real hotbed, some top MMA guys out there. I've got a young kid called Louis Lee Scott, 17 years old, 7-0 in MMA. He'd been doing Muay Thai, but he's going to be an absolute superstar in MMA, no doubt. His style, what he's got going on, is so good because he's got the stand-up that we work, but we found like a medium to pull that into the MMA. So his eyes are on point, his movement's on point, but he still finds himself in the positions to land the Muay Thai strikes with all that power, still generate the power and still be out of there in fast enough and quick enough not to be getting taken down and losing balance and falling all over the place. So watch out for him. He's going to be
He's a good kid. He's just signed with MTK, which is Mac the Knife Global, which I'm going to be working with. They've got boxers, so I work with the mind side of that, so they're getting onto it now. But they've also gone into the MMA side.
Till signed with them as well.
Yeah, Darren
Till. Darren Till signed
so
with
he's,
them.
He's, they've signed them too. Like they've got boxers. They've got Billy Joe Saunders, who I know you like, and Tyson Fury and blah, blah, blah. But they've also got an MMA side run by Kieran Kettle. And, they've just signed Louis. Louis's exceptional.
Well, the UFC's now coming to Liverpool, and Darren Till's going to be in
my
the headline.
My home city now, yeah.
But he doesn't have a fight yet, correct?
No, nothing confirmed
not
yet.
No.
I'm hoping it's going to be Usman. Kamaru Usman and him are going back and forth on Twitter. That guy gets no love. Kamaru Usman, 7-0 in the UFC, smashes everybody. Everybody's scared of him. Nobody calls him out.
I'm pretty sure Till will be scared of him. He'd love it, Till, wouldn't he?
He loves
it. Yeah.
Till's, they've been going back and forth.
Yeah,
I think
he
Till's
loves
the
it.
Guy for him.
It's yeah, definitely. What fight that'd be.
And the stand-up wise, Till has a massive advantage. And then on the ground, Usman should have an advantage. Yeah. So it's a very interesting fight.
Yeah, interesting fight.
Usman's a fucking tank, too. That guy's fucking animal, man.
Yeah, I've not seen too much of him, but
it's because everybody's scared of him. He can't get fights.
Well, there you go.
Usman is a fucking stud. I mean, that guy is no joke. He there's very few people calling that guy out.
Yeah, but Till will be loving that.
Oh, yeah. Till's the one that's calling him out.
Yeah, there you go. He thrives on stuff like that. I've known Darren since he were 16 years old, and we used to train together like Muay Thai back in there. He used to come over to my gym, Bad Company, with his coach, and we used to work together, and I'd pad work him and do bits with him. And he's always had that attitude, and never been scared of anyone. Always have been like, yeah, whatever, bring it on.
I believe him. There hasn't been a single guy in the UFC with one fight that's got as much hype as that guy.
You know,
one fight fights cowboys, smashes him. I mean, you see what he did to Cowboy.
Yeah,
Cowboy,
well, everyone knows then he's the real deal as
he's
well.
He's always
then.
Been special. He's one of these kids, like when I seen him growing up, he's one of these kids that just comes and he's special. And I mean, the city's behind him, everyone, because he comes to our gym where I train, Four Corners Gym, with John Gillies and Bawley and all them and Mick and Alan. And he comes down there, sticks his head in, but he doesn't train. But I've trained there, but he comes and sees us and he's a great guy. But his coach, Colin Herron, I grew up with, kind of, because I was trained with Ty Goldmaster Skin, and we used to do demos and stuff, because believe it or not, I used to be all right. And but Colin was always a little bit better. And since then, he's got Carlbon Gym, and he's had UFC fighters from Liverpool. But he's got this star in Darren, and the whole city is he gets a bit like him in Leeds. They just get swamped by people.
Now, is this when Darren was fighting Muay Thai that he became popular?
Yeah, well, when he fought Muay Thai, didn't he? He were always like one of the most naturally talented kids you would ever see.
He's with Simon Audley, then, a different coach.
Yeah, he used to come down to our gym, and he'd have a fight coming up, and he would just be wiping the floor with everyone. He didn't even really train hard back then either. He used to come down, he was a young kid, he'd mess around, he'd run riot, and didn't really hardly train, but still turn up, fight and win. Since then, someone with that natural talent, he's now got that dedication, that hard work. So someone who's that naturally talented and who's going to work that hard, that's going to be a force to be reckoned
with. And a southpaw.
Yeah, forced to be reckoned with.
When he stepped in and caught Cowboy with that left elbow, did you see that fight?
Yeah.
When he stepped in and just drove up that elbow and smashed Cowboy's nose, you're like, wow, that was fast.
He cuts distance so quick as well. But Colin, his trainer, he trained Mudakwan, is it? Taekwondo?
Mudakwan, yeah.
Yeah, he was like black belt at 11 or something like that. And, you know, he's just, Colin takes no bullshit. You know, Colin just says, that's the way it is. A bit like Richard. That's the way it is. That's what you got to do. That's what you're doing. And since Darren's had that influence in his life, like Liam said, and obviously the story about him going to Brazil, he's just been another level.
What makes a guy naturally talented? Like, you take a guy like Darren Till, like, when you say naturally talented, like, what is about a guy like that that just picks things up quicker?
I don't know. It's hard to explain. Some people just walk in a bad company gym and they'll have 2-3 lessons and they'll just be able to, they'll have that flow, the movement, the rhythm and stuff like that. Darren were like that ever since, I remember when he first started, I remember his coach saying, I've got this kid, you need to see him. You need to come and look at him. Southpaw, should see him kick. He's only been training a few months. And when I saw him, I was like, he looks like he's a seasoned pro, 5-6 years of training. We've had plenty like that walk in our gym at Bad Company and they'll come in, they'll have a few fights and they're like, oh, it's all right, this. But as soon as it gets hard and the level steps up and they realise how hard they have to work to actually compete at that level, that's the end of them. You don't really see them anymore. And it's like the biggest waste of talent you've ever seen. We've had plenty like that walk through our gym.
Yeah.
It's not many.
Talent's not enough.
No, not when you get to that level. It is to a certain level when you can get yourself out of jail, but when the level steps up and everyone's working hard and people who are as talented as you are working hard, then that's when you're going to be in trouble. That's why Darren's gone off and done what he's done. That's why, and shown what he's all about.
There's this class, my youngest daughter, she's 7, she takes martial arts, takes this mixed martial arts class. There's this 5-year-old in this class, and they're doing drills in the bag, and I'm watching this 5-year-old kick the bag. He's got his hands up high, he's moving like this, da-da-bang! Turns the hip over, perfect, even his switch kick. And I'm watching this 5-year-old, and I went over to his parents, and I went, if I was like a coach that was looking to recruit a fighter at a young age, I'd grab that fucking kid. Like, that kid's special. Like, there's something that he figured out at 5. At 5, all the other kids, you're looking at all the other kids in the class, they're flailing their arms all over the place.
Not paying attention. They're kicking up.
They're barely. This fucking kid is like this. His hands are glued right below his eyes, like bang, bang, crack, bang, bang, crack.
Well,
at
our,
5!
Our kids' class at Bad Company, I don't like training upstairs at the same time when they're on, because all the technique is so good, it's embarrassing sometimes. You look at them all and you think, like, from 6 to 12, these are amazing, but like I say, it's only the ones that really want it, who are really willing to put the hard work in, who will go from the next level and the next level and the next level. Because a lot drop off, no matter how talented they are. Not a lot of people like having to go to that place where you need to go to get to a good level.
Yeah, he doesn't like people watching him when he can't do things well either. Mm. Like when he's learning things, he likes to go over in the corner and practice things on his own. It's like very interesting when you watch like someone who's just got like a special inclination towards something.
There's a kid called Shea Williams from Liverpool, and all the blokes are talking about is 8.
8.
I'm friends with his dad, Mick.
8.
Yeah, he's 8.
Everyone's talking about an 8-year-old.
All these guys, you know, these big, sort of strong, like, all right, me fucking hell, have you seen that kid? He's fucking brilliant, that age, 8 years of age. Lovely kid, but he's just one of these kids that can do everything.
Yeah.
Look, Dad, I can balance on one hand. And
I'll tell you what, the best video on YouTube is that we saw the other day as well. Them two young, the black American kids.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
The boxing coaches. Yeah,
yeah. That kid's amazing.
Did you see that?
Yes.
And the coach and what he was saying, the one holding the pads.
He was right.
He knows more than most boxing trainers I've ever seen in my life.
It was and he's like 5 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. And the hand speed.
Unbelievable.
Amazing. Yeah.
Brilliant. Oh, best video I've seen all year. That, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, that whoever fucks with that kid in school.
Yeah, they're in trouble.
That's a big problem.
Maybe it's that kid that sent that thing saying you're dropping your left hand. If it is him, you better listen up.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you better listen up, man.
I'm sorry.
you're getting hated on by 6-year-olds. Yeah. It's I think it's interesting today too, as opposed to in the past, that you can watch videos like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, before you'd have to like watch a VHS tape and sit down and analyze it and pause it. Like now you could be at a fucking bus stop on your phone and you could watch world class fighters instantly. Mm. Instantly.
Yeah. The thing with that is, with the internet, as well as being able to watch world class fighters instantly.
Here's a kid.
What?
Look at this kid. There. That's him and his dad, I guess. Look at that fucking technique.
Unbelievable.
Look, it's incredible. He ducks under. I mean, everything. Blocking punches. Fucking amazing, man. Look at that. He goes to the body. That's crazy. I mean, he looks like he's 4. That's a different kid. That's an even tinier kid.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
But yeah, the thing with the internet as well, though, what's starting to happen now, though, a lot, especially in the UK, people will say, right, we try to match a show. Right, we've got a guy here, he's had 3 fights, your guy's had 3 fights, let's match him. And they go, oh no, give me his name. I need to search him on YouTube, I need to search his Facebook, I need to search this. So as well as being a blessing, it's a curse for stuff like that, because back when I started fighting, I would say, Richard would just go to me, I'd walk in the gym, Richard would go, you're fighting on Saturday, this might be on Wednesday.
Right.
I'd go, all right. And then that would happen, he'd turn up Saturday, you have your fight, but now it's like, I want to know his name, his gym, what's his Facebook.
Isn't that a badge of courage, too, to be able to do that? Like, that's something that people would always admire, like a guy that would come into the gym and someone would say, would you like to fight this weekend? They go, fuck yeah.
Yeah, martini man, anytime, anywhere, any place.
Yeah, I mean, that is what you're here for.
Everyone in our gym's always been like that.
Well, but I'm sure it trickles down.
Yeah,
of course,
from Richard.
The thing
from
is,
you
as
guys.
Well, we've got a big junior circuit now with Yokao. We've got Yokao Next Generation.
How do you feel about that, about little kids fighting?
They don't fight head contact.
No head contact. No. Yeah. Just leg kicks, body kicks.
Yeah, so it makes them more skilled, does that?
Yeah.
A lot more skilled.
Yeah, catching
for
kicks,
sure.
Low kick, push kicks and everything. I mean, some of the kids we got another kid
They can't head kick either?
No, just strictly body.
We've got some kids from Richard's 2 sons.
Yeah, Finley and Fergus.
Yeah, and we've got
Joe Ryan.
Lewis George. Joe Ryan, who's...
And what year do you let
Riley
them?
Smith.
Well, Joe Ryan's just 13. He's just fought pro in Thailand and knocked out, I think, an 18-year-old Thai boy.
Yeah, so's Riley
Smith.
Whoa.
He fought pro in Thailand when he was 13?
Yeah. Last week.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there's a video on YouTube.
Where the fuck are his parents?
Yeah, but... They were there with him, but this kid is special. He's taller than me. He's 13. He's taller than me.
Wow.
He fights at about 59, 60 kilos. I've done a lot of work with him one-to-one as well. His dad has done an amazing job with him. He's had about... Is he unbeaten in 36 fights?
He was unbeaten in 36
fights. 36 fights and he's 13.
Lost, I think he lost in the IFMAs
in
Russia, against a kid that was like 16 and they weighed 4 kilos heavier. We've got another kid called Riley Smith, Jonathan Haggerty. Just, we've got some
keep
kids.
Keep this thing close to your face.
Sorry.
Just,
we got
you
some,
can move it around there.
We've got some right kids that are coming through. Jonathan Haggerty, who's just been on Yokao special, 20 years old, beat a great fighter, a veteran called Keith, and brilliant
now,
fight.
What kind of program do you have for these young kids? Do you have classes based on age groups? Do you have classes based on weight classes? Or do you just have kids' classes?
Well, at Bad Company Gym, the kids' class is 6 to 12-year-old. There's about 40 or 50 sometimes in our kids' classes, and there'll be about 3 or 4 of the instructors taking it. Fighters will all be up in the ring, fight training, intermediates will be in the middle, beginners down at the end. So everyone's got someone catering for them, helping them bring through. All the fighters are working together. Watching them, it's just like watching the mini version of all our fighters upstairs. It's class to watch sometimes. I like just going and watching them all training and sparring with each other and clinching and helping each other. And then a lot of them will stay behind after the class and really, you know, putting the extra hours and the extra work. And it's good watching. Sometimes you'll see someone come in the gym and they'll walk in right shy. And then I look at them again 2 months later and I'll see him on the pads going, bam, bam, bam. And he's like looking around going, yeah, see that? See that? It's class watching that happen. Do you know what I mean? And you see him going through from being like walking in gym, being a shy little 7, 8-year-old boy, and then smashing the pads and having the first fight. Our junior team is so good because obviously we've got Richard and Lisa training them, but my cousin Andy, he's also a 5-time world champion. He's doing PTs with a lot of them. Joe Craven's only like 19 years old, but he's so good with the kids as well. So they've got a wealth of experience. And like I say, they're all just going bap, 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 and then next minute they're up there fighting and just smashing it. And I think we had 18 fights for our junior team last week, and I think we won something like 16. So
now, I'd asked you earlier when we were working out together, you've never really considered fighting MMA.
No. Like I say, it took me a long time to get where I am in Muay Thai. And let's be honest, who's going to stand up in front of me if I had to go in a ring? I'd have to get my ground game so good.
Right.
It'll take me a long time. And to be honest, I'm really I love Muay Thai. I love fighting Muay Thai. And I think you can only be good at something that you're passionate about. If I got in there and I thought, well, I'll do this because there's a lot of money involved in it, I wouldn't be where I am. I fight Muay Thai because I absolutely love it.
Your style, though, it's really interesting. It would apply very well to MMA.
When I'm teaching the MMA fighters that I do train, I think I have got that good medium of how the striking needs to be, and without getting taken down and off balancing yourself. Because I'm not arrogant enough to go in there and say, right, Muay Thai, you need to do this in MMA. You need to fight like a Thai and do that. I'm not arrogant enough. I know there has to be changes, and I think I do spot that well, and it does work with the fighters I train. But like I say, I love fighting Muay Thai. That's where my heart is. And maybe if someone came over and said, no, there's loads of money, do you want to? Maybe, yeah, but like, I'm a stand-up fighter.
Right.
So
have you done any wrestling or jiu-jitsu or anything?
I haven't,
like that?
No. I've always been so concentrating on my Muay Thai fight career. I'm always booked out all year. I don't really get... I've thought about it before, doing it a bit with AVT with Danny Mitchell, but I'm booked out when fights. I've got July, August, October, November.
You're already booked.
I'm booked out all right to the end of the year.
That many fights in advance?
Yeah, yeah.
That's very different than like boxing.
Year and a half in advance.
So a year and a half
almost,
in advance?
Almost, yeah.
Wow.
It's
no
all
kidding.
Penciled in, so I'm not going to have no time anyway because I need to stay on top of my own training just so I'm ready to go from one fight to the next.
And if you get injured?
I have to pull out. I had to pull out. Right. I brought my foot in my last fight in Paris in December. Brought my foot, split my shin. And I couldn't fight in March. I was meant to fight 2 weeks ago, but obviously I couldn't do that one. Injuries are part of the sport.
Are you back to kicking things now?
I'm back kicking 100%, and as soon as I get back home, I'll be back in camp ready to go in July.
That's impressive. 3 months later, you're throwing hard kicks.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, when you started working with Vinny, what was the big difference? Like, what's the big difference in doing this mind coaching, and like, what have you noticed improvement in?
My awareness, like the stuff with the Hakalal that we're on about, and the anchoring it, your awareness increases
like
so much.
When you anchor, what are you thinking? When you smash your gloves together at the beginning of a fight?
I'm sure everyone it'll be different. What I'm doing is when I'm pushing my gloves together, all the stuff we've worked on, like the Hakalal, the awareness, everything's all just coming into me. The warrior, it sticks with me. That word will always stick with me after we've worked before. I'm sure people have worked with him and got different stuff that they're anchoring. Well, that's what I'm anchoring.
When you say anchoring, what do you...
Bringing it in and bringing it all back into here, all the stuff that we've worked on. Like when we did the Anahuac fight, the Warrior stuff, we also had another fight against Andre Kulbin. I got wrote off by everyone in this fight. He'd been to England twice before. He'd knocked out two of our top guys in the weight above me. So I stepped up in weight to fight him. And I went and did a bit of work with Vinny then. And there were a few key words that we said then. One of them were visible damage. And what were the other one?
Hot knife through butter.
So you guys and your goddamn accents. Would you learn how to speak American English?
Jesus. Hot knife through butter.
So what I'd said.
I'm a natural American. I am.
That's pretty good.
What I'd said to Vinny is, I said I don't just want to beat this guy. I said everyone's writing me off. I said I want to smash him to absolute smithereens.
He told me the game plan. He already told me what he was going to do with Andre.
I told
Kulbin.
Everyone how I was going to win, and no one believed me.
Yeah, and then, but I obviously, because you know, if you didn't mention it, I'm his biggest fan. and what we did, I did a CD for him. So I said, listen to this CD before you go to bed. So I recorded this CD, and it was weird because I was commentating. Thankfully, on it was on the main event, wasn't it?
Yeah, main event.
And I was watching it, and it was like playing a video game. Because it was just like, low kick, bang. It was just like, and everything that I, and all the thing that I said, kind of cheating in it, really. I was like, it's like a hot knife through butter. And he went, bang. And he just, I mean, if you ever see it, he absolutely destroyed Kulbin. And Kulbin is a legendary fighter from Belarus. And it was just, it went down.
Yeah, every time I kicked him, I could see how I was hurting him, and that's what was coming into my head. And again, it's weird. It's hard to explain unless you actually do work with him. But yeah, it worked again perfect. I know what worked perfect, and that one worked perfect.
What was the game plan that people didn't believe?
I said to everyone, I said, I'm going to stop him in three rounds. And because I were moving up in weight, and because he knocked out two other top fighters in England from that weight above.
Who did he knock out? He knocked out Michael
Dix in first round, and I think he stopped Imran Khan as well.
Oh, okay.
And I told everyone I was going to stop him. I said his legs too straight. I said, I'm going to smash his leg. I'm going to stop him with low kicks. It'll be like a hot knife through butter. And I stopped him in round three with low kicks.
Now, when you were creating this CD for him, what was the goal? What was your objective?
He told me what he was going to do, so I reaffirmed it. So we did like a trance thing where you go into, you lead anyone into an induction, and then just played out the fight in his mind, telling him the specifics of what he told me and how he speaks, because you have to use their language back to them if I said, something that's not in their vocabulary. Obviously, I'm not saying you're thick.
But I am.
Smacking wall. So he had to add lots of what he told me into the CD. So it went in, it works. I've never done it before. It was a gamble. I just thought, when at all costs.
It seems like you could probably do that for a lot of people, right? Different things that you're trying to work on, if you could just listen to it and in your earbuds or something like that, while you're doing other things.
Yeah, of course. And I have people now who work with me for a year, like clients that want to work with me for a year. They pay me for a year and they just want to ring me and talk about stuff. It's become like a real dot, sort of different than hypnotherapy and just being a therapist in that sort of way. But yeah, it's possible. And look, I the reason why we're doing this is because, number one, I've said he's my friend, but number two, what we do works.
Yeah.
These are tried and tested. He's 8 World Times World Champion. I'm his mind coach. Obviously he's got a great coach in Richard and everybody, but what we do works, and people are starting to see the benefits. The feedback we've got from San Diego Boxing Club, Artem and Jesse and all them, it's been mind-blowing, hasn't it?
Well, there's definitely good states of mind to go into anything that's difficult, and again, fighting is one of the most difficult things, and then there's bad states of mind, and those states of mind can determine the outcome. And just to have something that you can get to in your mind that can put you on the right path, like what you were saying, Warrior or Hakalau, or these anchors that you're doing, these different things. Like, I feel like these are applicable for everyday life, too.
Exactly.
That this is something that people could really benefit from, to instead of just being random and wild with your thoughts and your ideas going into something and hoping that you have a good point of view and a good perspective, instead of that, have these clear paths that you've already thought through.
Yeah, I mean, your mind has to have a clear set.
Yeah,
it has to know a way to go. Think of it like a TomTom or a sat nav. You point that in that direction, and that's the roads it's going to take you to. If you put in the wrong say you type someone in Illinois and you're driving around Los Angeles looking for it, you're not going to find it. So we have to be specific. And what I do is I try and get my programs that I do, various programs that I do, is I have to get what the client wants. And then once I get the client, I put that in, but then I find out what's getting in their way through the language. They kind of language it wrong. Mm. They say, I want this, and said, yeah, but you're saying that. And it's I love the job. It's such a blessing to be here, and I'm not being all, rose-tinted glasses, and I absolutely love my job. I love people, the people with the feedback I've had of getting messages saying, I feel different, I'm happier. There's no better job in the world, not at all.
Well, I mean, you know better than anybody that as a fighter, the way you think and your mindset, that affects your training, it affects your outcome, it affects how you feel in between trainings. It's and then absolutely affects the way you fight.
Yeah, of course it does. I mean, I reckon, like I mentioned earlier, I reckon I've lost fights on points because my mindset's been wrong going into it, thinking, right, this is going to be an absolute war, this. And then I've gone in there thinking, right, I'm ready for war, I'm ready for this, and I've got outpointed. Mm. Because I've gone in there thinking that. If I'd have gone in there maybe a bit more relaxed, sharper, on point, I'd have been playing the game. But I won.
You'd have adjusted.
I'd have adjusted, but I didn't. But I thought, like you just said, it happens. But if you are on point with your mind, that needs to be as strong as your body. Like I said before, you can never, ever be too well prepared. That's why I've gone to Vinny and I've used him, and it has worked for me in massive, massive, massive fights.
Do you meditate at all?
I do the Wim Hof method.
Again,
Vinny.
We love Wim Hof.
Vinny and Vinny and Jordan showed me about that. I remember I saw Jordan doing it one time before a fight. I said, "Oh, what are you doing there?" And he told me Wim Hof. So I asked Vinny what it was, and then I started with the cold showers every morning, the breathing, and again, I've seen massive changes in that, in like my heart rate, and that is absolutely amazing how that works.
His resting pulse rate was 31.
No, Jordan. Wow. Jordan's were 31. Mine was 32.
Fuck.
Dragged.
You missed it by a beat.
Yeah.
That one beat is everything.
Yeah.
I went to Wim's house. Luckily, I know, because I work for Infusion, and they did a little bit of a documentary on him. And I went with Mohammed Kamal, who I know really well, great guy. And we went to his house, and we went in the frozen water and all that sort of stuff. And then I started following and doing this stuff, and I seen him on your show twice. He's like a Jedi, isn't he?
He's brilliant. There's something about him. His perspective is, and his enthusiasm is not. It's not just infectious. It's like it changes you.
Yeah, it does.
Like he changes the way you think about.
Yeah,
things.
I want to meet him. I definitely want to.
He's
meet
awesome.
Him.
Yeah. I'll hook that up.
Yeah, awesome. I would absolutely love that.
Have you done cryotherapy at all?
I have. Yeah, my friend in Liverpool, Doc. He's got one. Obviously, my body gets a lot of wear and tear. Holding pads takes a lot out of you. Especially when you've got to train twice as well on top of that.
Your fucking forearms, right?
Yeah.
Bruisers?
Yeah,
guys kick hard?
My back, and obviously from sparring, my legs are beat up.
Fucking elbows and forearms.
Yeah, exactly. I get stiff, and after an hard week of training and an hard week of teaching, I do need that. So I go over to Liverpool and I jump in there, and I always come out feeling like $1 million all the time.
No, I love it. Yeah. I love it. What about isolation tanks? Have you done sensory deprivation tanks?
No, I've never done that.
I got one here. You want to try it?
Hell yeah.
How much time do you got?
We've got time.
You got time?
Got
okay, beautiful. We'll
you'll
set
get
you up.
Bored. Yeah. Let me out. I'm bored.
No. You won't, man. You think that. You go in as long as you want.
All right.
I have one right out of here. I fucking love it, man. It's amazing.
He's on all sorts now. Since we've come to California, we've got a Feel Supreme, our mates from that Matty Murphy has got him on CBD oil. He's doing all that.
CBD's great, man. Yeah.
Hair, you know, follicle things and
really
stuff.
Really great with CBDs is fucking, I don't have it here. I left it in my car. I have this lotion, CBD lotion. Apply it topically where you got like bruises.
Someone
or
told me
inflammation.
About that. Yeah, I've not tried
fucking
that yet.
Great, man.
But I got a test done by shoulder. I got a test done by my sponsors. Like, they took all the hair follicles out of me. They tested them all, and so they could test what I should be eating, what food's good for me.
Hair follicles.
Hair follicle test, yeah. Like, they properly sent it off to the lab, and they tested it all, and it came back.
Why would they test that and not blood? Or
I'm not sure. I'm no idea how it works, but they came back and they said, right, this is what you should eat, this is what you shouldn't eat. If this is in your diet, try taking it out, because this is causing, like, some disruption here and stuff. It really interests.
What kind of stuff are they saying causes? This might be horseshit.
Checking your hair.
What about your toenails? They check your toenails?
Certain different fruits and stuff like that. They were saying like raspberries and nuts and stuff were causing some sort of disruption in my diet. That it'd be better if I took them out.
Almonds.
Yeah. I went to one of those places and they told me to stop eating avocados. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. There's nothing wrong with avocados. You guys are quacks.
I like avocados.
Avocados are great for you. It's like one of the best foods you can eat. Like, I'm like, what? Avocado? Fuck out of here.
But I just want to say, because we've been here for a couple of weeks now, right? The coolest thing I've seen is how the fuck did you hit that target?
That just
that
blew
arrow?
My mind. That I could not believe it.
Oh, the archery target.
Yeah. That was amazing.
Well,
that was amazing.
I do it every day.
You That's are Robin Hood. You're from fucking Nottingham. Get over here and kill the sheriff.
45 yards and to hit that little small hole like that is not difficult.
Yeah, but you just done a training session as well, so you'd have had a bit of a shake.
Yeah, you were sweating. You just went. Whoosh.
But I just broke the record of kicking that pad, so I was excited.
Hell yeah,
that's what it was.
We were there.
I was
excited.
We got on film. Luckily, we were a little concerned. We had a spliced sound from the other one. Because we had more than one recording of it, luckily. But that thing that Francis Ngannou punched that almost as hard as I kicked that. That's how fucking hard that. Oh, here it is, right here.
There it is.
Francis punched that fucking thing almost as hard as. Where's 152? That's the highest anyone's ever. That's the highest anybody's ever registered on that thing. Someone will break it. I don't think that many people are kicking that thing.
Yeah, we're not
going to
break it today.
Not today, bitch. I got that. But yeah, that archery thing, man, it's the same thing as like today when you were showing me different things. Like you guys showing me just a little bit of an adjustment changed the power of that kick. Just that little extra.
Yeah, it's all body mechanics. Yeah. Every strike, every sweep, everything mm-hmm. I teach is always body mechanics. And just like that little bit extra we'll get.
It's the same thing with archery. With archery, it's all about posture and form, and you got to have your elbow up high, and everything has to be perfect, and you're pulling with your back. I mean, there's a lot of parallels between archery and fighting.
Yeah, but you just went, didn't he?
Yeah, picked it up, went bonk.
Because I just watched the arrow, and it just went, and I just thought, shit, you don't need to fight.
But I do, I do that every day.
It's amazing.
You know, I shoot arrows every day, and that's at 45 yards of my house. I do 90 yards.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. So it's that's about as far as I'd shoot an animal, though. It's 45 yards. Like, maybe I'd shoot a pig or something that nobody gives a shit about. Like, I'd shoot it, 70
stuff
yards
that we ain't
or something
got
like
in
that.
England.
Yeah. You're lucky you don't have them in England, man. We got problems with them here.
What pig problems?
Oh, they're fucking – they're invasive species.
Really?
They're crazy, and they breed 3-4 times a year. They'll have, 10, 12 pigs a litter.
Planet of the pigs?
Yeah,
Planet of the pigs. 3-4 times a year sounds like my life.
Man, I'm telling you.
Happy birthday for tomorrow, Lisa, by the way.
Oh, sweetie. You got to there's videos of pigs in Texas. Texas is so bad that they opened up a highway, and the day they opened it, they built this highway, and the day they opened it, there was something like 40 car accidents with pigs.
Really?
The people were driving by, the pigs were running across the road, and they're just slamming them into them. There are millions of pigs in Texas. Millions.
I didn't know that.
Well, they're an invasive species. They were brought over here in California by William Randolph Hearst. You know that crazy guy that Orson Welles made that movie Rosebud about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's also the reason why marijuana is illegal over here, too.
Right.
He made those propaganda articles blaming marijuana for causing Mexicans and blacks to rape white women. It was this crazy propaganda, but it was also that he didn't have to switch his factories over to hemp because they had come out with a new machine called a decorticator that allowed them to process hemp fiber. Hemp just makes a way better paper. Mm. And he had all these paper mills and all these forests that were dedicated to trees they would make paper out of. And so when they came out with this decorticator, they're like, well, hemp is the new industry. He's like, yeah, the fuck it is. And so this crazy asshole, literally is the reason why marijuana is so illegal and demonized, not just in America, but around the world. And he let a bunch of fucking wild pigs loose on he has this gigantic estate. These fucking things are everywhere, bro. This ain't shit. I mean, these look more like domestic pigs.
Looks like
pigs.
A nightclub in Leeds, does that?
These are domestic pigs, bro. Jamie, these are not wild pigs.
Yeah, it shut down a freeway in Texas.
Oh, well, you know what it is, though? That's a truck fell over.
Yeah, they were inside it.
Yeah, but those are like regular pigs.
In Bhutan.
Wild pigs would never be around a person like that. They would fucking be out of there.
Yeah.
In Bhutan, is that the Bhutan, a country called Bhutan? And I've heard that they feed pigs cannabis. They eat cannabis.
Well, sure, yeah. Probably tastes good.
But it does.
Make them delicious bacon, gets
you
high
that
as fuck.
And then yeah. When you get drug tested like Canelo, you go, it's because of pigs. Yeah. Yeah.
So you guys don't believe Canelo with the clenbuterol?
I don't know. I just love GGG, don't we?
Yeah, GGG's like the lord to us.
But you got to appreciate Canelo as well, right? I mean,
yeah,
Canelo's a bad motherfucker.
Yeah, he's a great fighter. But I can't see past the GGG win this time.
Yeah, well, I think GGG won the first time.
Yeah, I do, definitely.
I think he was nervous.
By two or three rounds.
The first fight, I think
Triple
he was nervous.
G? Really? Why
I
do
think
you think that?
First pay-per-view fight.
Mm.
And first, big, big, big fight.
Yeah, you could
big
tell name. Early doors, yeah. Couldn't you? He didn't see himself early doors. Yeah. It took him till 3 or 4 to get going, but when he did and then found that steady pressure and got behind his jab.
He's brilliant.
And we've seen that little clip that he said he's going to change. So mm-hmm. I think he's going to go to the body more.
Yeah, I think he should have done that in the first fight when he was up on the ropes. Canelo really good at evading his right hand, wasn't he? If he'd have gone mm-hmm. to the body then, I think...
Plus, I think there's going to be a lot of that, and I think there's going to be a lot more jabs.
Yeah, plus
his jab is
so underrated. What he did to David Lemieux. He actually smashed him to pieces with his jab.
Yeah.
Did you see what Abel Sanchez said? That when he turns to the right, what happened was the referee was... Because he was turning to his left to get away from the right hand.
Yeah.
He was exposing his back, and if Gigi had hit him there, he was worried about getting a point taken off.
So the referee would have called him on that. Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah, he should be able to punch.
Especially
the
referee was as bad as the judge.
Well, there was one
Adelaide Bird.
Adelaide Bird, yeah. Bird? Unbelievable,
sweet lady.
Yeah,
Very nice lady.
Big fuck off like glasses her. Like that, like massive.
Listen, man,
thick
she
rims.
She was responsible for some wacky ass fucking decisions.
She's
last
done it a
UFC.
Lot. Yeah, she's done it a lot.
A
yeah.
lot, and no one does anything about
what
it.
What were the other main boxing ones she did it in?
Holyfield.
Lewis. Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't she a part of the whole Pacquiao, Tim, the fuck's his name?
Just retired.
Tim
Desert
Bradley.
Storm, Tim Bradley. Tim Bradley. Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't she a part of that as well?
I don't know. I think she was part of the... I think she's the one that gave Canelo the draw against Mayweather when he got screwed.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Did she really?
It was her, yeah.
That's hilarious.
I think.
She should be fired.
Yeah, that was close.
Very nice lady again. Very nice lady.
The Stevie Wonder world of
that's
judging.
Crazy that she gave Canelo a draw against Mayweather. I mean, he got fucking schooled in that fight.
Massively.
Yeah, big time. Did he land? I think he landed, did he?
Not much.
But not much. That was an interesting... Well, in his defense, Mayweather drained him down to like... What did he get him down to? 152 or
something?
Yeah, something
like that.
But they caused that. Do you know that?
No.
They said, well, we'll fight you at 152. Elena Delaby went, okay. Because he said we was going to do it at 154, and they says, we don't care, we'll go down to 152. And they went, thanks.
What a stupid mistake.
So they just left themselves wide open for that.
They did it to themselves. Yeah.
You could tell he was seriously sluggish in that.
Yeah,
Well, he makes anyone look sluggish, though, doesn't he, to be fair?
Yeah, he does, man. He's amazing. Like, what Floyd is able to do, like, his control of distance and his understanding of what you're going to do next is so incredible.
Yeah.
Like, you see him pop a jab, and then before the guy even throws the right hand, he's like,
he's gone, yeah.
And the right hand passes him, he pops him with a left hook, and he's out there.
Yeah.
And he's like, bitch, I knew what you were going
to
do.
He did that where Marquez did that where he popped him and just ducked, and he was gone right back of him before he even realized
what
happened.
Yeah, and he did some great things with Robert Guerrero.
Yeah, of course.
We've got a boxer in England called Josh Kelly. Have you seen him?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
I love that guy.
Yeah, you guys have a lot of great boxers over there now. I mean, obviously, you have the world champion, Anthony Joshua.
Yeah.
Do you hear the UFC is going to offer him $500 million for some crazy
contact? Yeah, we heard that this morning.
I wonder if that's real.
Do it.
I wonder if it's real.
Joshua versus Ngannou with some fucking punch artist. Someone's going to sleep.
Jesus Christ. Francis is a great MMA fighter, but he's been fighting for 5 years.
Yeah.
He just hits fucking unbelievably hard.
I can't believe that you said he got 120,000 on that machine.
I think he's like 120 something. I think. Find out what.
129.
129? That's so crazy.
Wow.
That's so crazy. That's what I get with a kick. You little legs that carry you around all day.
That is absolutely.
I'm only 100 behind him.
Yeah. Well, you know, in his defense, he's 100 pounds heavier than me, but just what in the fuck? His hands are so big. Every time I shake his hands, I'm like, how is that a person? I mean, it's like shaking hands with a brick, like a giant brick. They're just so big.
I've got little baby hands as well. He'd probably crush mine.
He's a fucking huge dude, man. I mean, and we were talking before about how in his background, he worked as a child in a sand mine, digging sand.
Shoveling all day.
Just all day digging sand. Like, what a great workout that is for your body.
His whole story is ridiculous. All that. Say we're almost 5 years ago.
Five years ago, homeless.
And now he's fighting for UFC title.
Yeah, and came real close.
Yeah, it's a great story.
I mean, if anybody else other than Stipe's so fucking tough and skilled and kept away from him. But you saw what he did to Overeem. K-1 Grand Prix champion, Dream champion, Strikeforce heavyweight champion. Francis put him into orbit.
His head nearly came off of his shoulders, man. It was ridiculous.
Incredible. And you could see the way Overeem was fighting him too. He's like, it's like aware that any fuck up at any moment. Is this it? 129,161. I got 150. What was it? 152.
152.
That was today, though. Yeah. The other day, I was super fucking happy with Tyrone Spong. Was the former previous record 114.
Yeah,
he's got 129,161 with a punch. I got 152 today, bitch. Suck it. But that's with his arms, man. I mean, that is it's impossible to really overemphasize how fucking crazy that kind of power is with your
hands.
His
arms are going to be bigger than my legs, though, to be fair.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
Bigger than my legs. See, my legs. Little pins.
Well, a guy like that, I believe Francis is 33. I mean, imagine if they caught him when he was 23.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I mean, imagine that guy. It's like, that's what you were saying before. It's when you get a real champion, what you're getting is the top genetics, the top talent, skill, mindset, and discipline.
Yeah, and they've got that there, and they want it. It's wanting it that's the main thing. Because like, a lot of fighters, they'll have an hard fight and they'll get out. I've seen this again in our gym. They'll get out, they'll have won, but the fight will have been hard. And I remember saying, they'll come back going, that were hard. It's a fucking fight. It's going to be. It's meant to be hard. Yeah. He's meant to, you know what you're signing up for here. You know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I've never seen him again.
Yeah.
So
I can understand that though, can't you, as well? I mean, you have certain amount of real sort of. You was wanted to be world champion pretty much straight away, didn't you, when you started?
Yeah, of course.
You was 19 when you won your first world title.
19, yeah.
That's crazy.
Italy, yeah. And first time I fought Sanchez, I was 21.
What's going on with Giorgio Petrosian?
He's fighting on one championships.
Oh, he's fighting in MMA?
They've got a stand-up now. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they've signed like Fabio Pinker, Giorgio Petrosian, Yacht Sinclair.
They signed Yacht Sinclair? Yeah. I thought Yacht Sinclair retired.
No, he's back again.
He fought
back
last month and he won again.
Took a couple weeks off. Yeah. Said, fuck it, this is boring.
Yeah. I don't
basically.
Know.
That guy can fucking punch, man, for a tie.
Southpaw as well.
Southpaw. That guy starches people.
I remember when Jordan fought him in Thailand. I was in the corner for Jordan. And Jordan came back at the end of round two. I went to take his gum shield out. He went, duh. Yeah, I went, why? He went, oh, my teeth are in it. He knocked all his teeth out.
Wow.
It was a good close fight, though. Jordan had a real close fight with him.
Jordan's exceptionally talented.
He is.
Jordan was here the first time I came.
Yeah, no, I remember Jordan. Jordan wasn't. Yeah, I mean, it's the level of talent these days is just so fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And is one FC really huge in Asia? Like, how big is it?
Huge, massive.
Are they like UFC level?
Yeah.
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 Wow, no. Yeah, Michael Chiavello's doing that.
Is he?
Yeah, he's doing that.
I love that guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
But what they've done is now, I think they've started like three different. So they've got the MMA, and then they've got the hybrid, where it's Muay Thai in little gloves in the cage.
Like John Wayne Parr's
thing. Yeah, CMT. CMT.
Yeah.
And then they've got just stand-up Muay Thai with 8-ounce gloves. And or is it K1?
I think it's kickboxing K1.
Yeah, with the 8-ounce gloves, so they're going to have three separate things now.
There's certain guys that you just see a silhouette of them. Even if you didn't see their face, you would know who it was.
Yeah.
You know what my favorite that is? Sanchai. If you saw a silhouette of him just moving around, you'd be like, oh, yeah.
I fought him three times. I'm used to him booting me all over the place.
What is that like, fighting that guy?
Hard. You know what? It wants so much his power, or and he's accurate. If he wants to hit you straight on the chin, he'll hit you straight on the chin. If he wants to kick you clean across the ribs, he'll kick you clean across the ribs. The first time I fought him, I was only 21. A real close fight. I just showed him a little bit too much respect. So again, like I was saying about the Anna White fight earlier, I was saying, get me a rematch. I can do better than that. I can do better. And I honestly believed going into that fight, I was going to win. And in the second fight, we absolutely smashed each other to smithereens. I cut him really bad. I rocked him with punches. He hurt me as well with a punch and wobbled my legs. We absolutely battered each other. I remember in round four, I won the fourth round and he went grey in the corner. I went and sat down and I went, I'm going to win here. I'm going to win. By the time round five had happened again, hot colour back in skin, I blinked and he'd kicked me about 16 times. I went, how the fuck did he do that? I ended round to my coach and my coach went, because he's Sanchez.
Yeah.
And it's his eyes and stuff. That second fight, even though I lost it, it's one of my favourites, because to be able to push the greatest of all time, well, or at least of the last 20, 30 years, into that deep water, and I was really proud of that, and it won one of my best moments in sport, and he even said afterwards, one of my toughest fights. But we're good friends now and stuff, and I'll probably go over to Thailand and train with him at some point.
What amazes me about him is his movement. He's very unusual in the way he moves around. A light on his feet.
In and out.
And switches stances constantly and is very creative with his approaches. Like, he does all sorts of weird shit. Like, there's one fight. It's on his Sanchai Thailand Instagram. He's got a guy up against the ropes. And he steps hard to the right and throws a left high kick.
And it takes his head off.
And it's like straight up in the air.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like.
Well, if you watch what he does
he's
first.
He's throwing it like this.
Yeah. If you watch what he does first, I think he sets it up by kicking the leg and then bringing the other one over.
Yeah.
But he's a master of all stuff like that. I remember the first time I fought him, he jumped in the air and I looked up and I got kicked in the leg and I thought, what the fuck was that? Where'd that come from? I was looking at him in the air, but my leg got kicked and I'm thinking, how did he do that? And then when I watched it back, I realised and. Yeah, some of the stuff he does, no one else can do that.
He's so creative.
It's artistry, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what you get with Lomachenko
as well. His eyes as well. Yeah. He sees everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lomachenko's the same. He's artistry.
They're same sort of style. He's the Lomachenko Muay Thai.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
It's also the way he hits pads are different. Like, the way you hit pads, it's like, like he's just tapping. He's not hitting in and out full moving. Blast. But you don't want to get hit by any of it. No. But he's like constantly moving.
When he wants to, it hard as well. Though he can, like I say, a few times, eat me clean on chin. And I remember thinking, fucking hell, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, here he is, like working the pads. Like when you see the way he throws kicks, like he's not like. And he could probably do that shit all day.
Yeah,
too.
He's just so loose and flexible. And bop, bop, bop.
Yeah, he's a fucking tremendous fighter, man.
Yeah, and he must be 37, 38 now, and he's still.
Is he 38?
37, 38.
Yeah,
yeah.
Wow, like that,
it's amazing.
Yeah, and he's still wiping the floor with most of the
incredible
people he fights.
I mean, and just constant movement and attack, his pressure and the volume of strikes that he throws. I mean, he's a fucking unbelievable fighter, man.
Yeah, definitely the best without doubt over the last 20 years. I mean, he even did one fight in the stadiums in Thailand, 2-on-1, and in this one again.
2-on-1?
2-on-1, and this was only about 5-6 years ago. Pet Boon Chu, Sagat Dao. So Sanchai were ranked number 1, Pet Boon Chu number 2, Sagat Dao probably number 3. And these weren't like lesser fighters than him. He fought him 2-on-1.
How the fuck did he do that?
Sagat Dao got in. No, Pet Boon Chu got in for the first two rounds, fought, and he went at him and just tried to wear him down and clinch him. For the last three rounds, Sagat Dao jumped in fresh. Sanjay won.
Wow.
Sagat Dao's a southpaw. Pet Boon Chu's a clincher.
Yeah, but they're both clinchers. They both just tried to wear him down.
That is fucking insane.
Oh, there we go.
So he fought one guy for two rounds and then a second guy for
three.
Came
in fresh, yeah.
Unbelievable, man. That is unbelievable.
But look at the size difference as well. They're both miles bigger than him. That is like...
Well, he's always fighting bigger guys, right?
Well, he had to do a giveaway. In the stadiums, with how the betting works out there, no one is going to bet if Sanchai comes in at 135 and Pet Boon Chu comes in at 135, no one's going to bet because they know Sanchai's going to win.
Right.
But if Sanchai comes in at 130 and Pet Boon Chu comes in at 134, then it's evening it up a little bit. Then the gamblers will all get on it and he's going to...
That's what's also interesting about Thailand is that the gambling is such a giant part of the sport.
It influences it so big, and it influences the scoring and the decisions and stuff like that.
But what about like guys fixing fights?
You hear about it a lot. You hear about fighters throwing fights, but then they'll get thrown out of stadium. There won't be a lot of fight back in there. You do hear about that a lot. You also hear about people like dropping stuff in people's drinks to try and just like give them a little advantage. So when they're gamblers,
really?
Yeah,
Petrosian said to me he got poisoned when he fought.
Petrosian?
Petrosian said to me, whether it's true or not, I don't know, so don't quote me on it, but he told me that when he fought Nonathan Paul Pramuk, they said that they gave him a drink and he said he was dizzy.
Yeah, and that because on that fight, I think they had about $1 million side bet, so it's about $20,000 side bet, their gym and his gym. So you do hear about stuff happening like that.
Wow, that sucks.
It does.
Well, it's a wild-ass fucking place, Thailand, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's great, though.
I'm sure.
I love it. It's a great place. Yeah, I love it. I love going to the foods there, you know, especially Koh Samui where I go.
Yeah, I love Thai food.
Beautiful.
Man.
Koh Samui is beautiful. But, you know, Bangkok's beautiful. And
yeah, I think I spent too much time in Bangkok, though. I lived there for like 18 months to 2 years, sort of.
So whenever
I go now, I prefer to go to the island so I can train and then relax. Because when I was there, I was just living in the gym all the time. And I don't think I could do that anymore now. So
right.
I prefer to now. I could go.
Silk sheets, baby.
Yeah. I can train hard. And then I can. Yeah, the thing is, I was locked in a room in the gym with nothing but a fan blowing hot air on me. No aircon. All tired of that, like fast asleep, snoring. And I'm just there sweating my head off and like, having 2 hours sleep a night. And I couldn't do that anymore now.
Right.
I go to the island. I can still train just as hard. There's some great coaches there still, but I can go to the beach. I can relax. And
is that like Phuket? Is that where you go?
Phuket or Samui, yeah, same with Vinny. Yeah.
Is Phuket a safe place to go to?
You know, Thailand's safe.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go. They're used to like seeing drunken, not that I ever drink over there, and drunken stumbling down the road for hangs with like ladyboys waiting on motorbikes.
Foreigners.
Okay. You hear horror stories about Thailand in the media and stuff like that. There's horror stories everywhere you go.
Yeah, of course.
I've all the time I've spent there, I've never seen a untoward happen.
Really?
No, never.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Even though obviously it does happen, but it happens everywhere.
John Wayne Parr said the same thing. He goes over there and said everyone's lovely.
Yeah, it is.
And he
Australia's
did the same
great. Where he is, I've been to his gym and spent time with him.
He's another one that if you saw his silhouette, you'd absolutely know it was him.
Yeah, of course.
He's got such an odd style of movement.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a video of him. Go to John Wayne Parr's Instagram.
Yeah. Well, he's changed his style a lot now because obviously when he lived in Thailand, he had to fight the Thai way.
Mm-hmm.
But like since he's back in Australia now and he can adapt to all that because he's such a good puncher as well. He can fight both ways. I'm sure if he ever fought in Thailand, which he don't need to anymore, he's done all that. But if he did, I'm sure he'd know to.
Like, look at this. Like, the way he moves, it's 100%. John Wayne Parr, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very fascinating. Like, you, if you watched him, you would know for sure. If you didn't see his, if you just saw the silhouette, you're like, oh yeah, that's John Wayne Parker.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice 40 as well. I mean, he's got some engine.
41, motherfucker.
And he's fighting again in 2 weeks.
Training like a Bellator. Fucking savage.
Still knocking people out as well.
And one of the nicest guys you ever want to meet.
Yeah.
Just couldn't be nicer.
Yeah. His wife's nice. And you know, yeah. And his kid, have you seen his son Jesse doing flips and shit?
Yeah, and his daughter's like a killer.
Ninja. Yeah, me and her fought on the same show in August last year. And she came over and she beat a British girl. And,
yeah, she did, yeah.
And she's out there smashing.
I trained
now
with him
well.
In my garage and just watching him kick the bag. I was like, holy fuck, that guy kicks hard.
Yeah, and he comes down a lot of weight as well. The JWP, yeah. I think I've seen him before and he was like 84 kilos. And then like 2-3 weeks later, boom, 72.5, shredded.
Big fan of Australia. I'm a big fan of Australians. They're just nice people,
yeah,
man.
I've
never been.
Place.
Never been? Mm-hmm. It's fucking great. Everything can kill you, though. Don't leave your
everything
hotel.
Everything that begins with S, shark, spider, snake, Sasquatch. Everything that begins with S in Australia will kill you. Yeah, and I don't like of any shit. Of them things.
And crocodiles. Some Cs. Yeah. Some Cs can kill you, too.
If you're dyslexic, it's fine. Yeah,
it's a crazy fucking place. But, you know, that's they're pretty close to Thailand, right?
Like, yeah. About 6-hour flight or something.
Yeah, it's like their Spain, isn't it? I mean, when English go abroad, they, you know, and they go get drunk or go on package holidays, go to Spain. Thailand's their Spain, really.
Is that what you guys do? You go to Spain? Why do you go to Spain?
Yeah. Mallorca. I love Mallorca. Me and my wife go to Mallorca a lot.
Mallorca?
Mallorca.
Mallorca.
I go to Ibiza with all my friends.
Where?
Ibiza.
Oh, Ibiza, right?
Yeah, we say Ibiza.
Ibiza.
Oh,
you guys say Ibiza.
Ibiza.
Ibiza, yeah.
But it's a Z. How's it a th? Ibiza.
Same like Siobhan. It's not Sayaban.
Yeah,
I don't know. Ibiza.
Ibiza is a weird one. I've heard people say that. I'm like, where the fuck Ibiza, are you talking about? Ibiza. Write that down. And you're like, oh, that says Ibiza. What did you just say?
I'm too old to go to Ibiza now. Just be like, for all young.
Well, that's
go.
A Spain thing, right? Like they youth. They there's a lot of thugs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. True. Yeah. Probably is.
Yeah.
Some good fighters from Spain as well.
Fuck yeah! Well, Europe has always had like ridiculous Muay Thai talent. Right?
Yeah, the French, I think. Outside Thailand, I think it's probably France, then England.
Who's that guy that went to Jean-Marc, what is his name? That
Skaborski.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jean-Charles Skaborski.
Yeah, he was a great fighter. Ooh, I remember when he came into that MMA house that Saint-Pierre brought me in, he was still drunk and just fucked them all up.
He was up all night drinking at a bar, like went to a club, was drinking, came in, smelled like shit, had a fucking, like a glass with him of alcohol, like, and then put on the pads. Like, put on the gloves and beat the shit out of everybody.
Yeah, we're dropping them all and everything. Yeah.
But throwing them around,
I think he got
them.
To rank number one at Rajaratnam Stadium when he was fighting, so he was, like, top level. And he's promoting now, putting on, like, real good shows.
Yeah, really good shows. Yeah.
The crazy
shows.
Thing about him is he doesn't look like anything.
No.
Like, you look
he
at
never
him,
looked in great shape or anything, but he was like that when he fought.
Flat, no but muscles, he could, but he fucks people up.
He could bang, he could
Danny
rip.
Bill didn't look like that, did he? But he could catch the legs and sweep the ties and stand with them.
Put you to sleep when he
with that right hand. Yeah, John Wayne Parr beat him though, didn't he?
Yeah, knocked him out. Well, what was great about Skaborski though? He used to fight from 140 up to 165. He won no weight class for him. Wow. They just said there's a fight at 165. Do you want to do it? He'd go yeah, and then he'd go fight. And so you got fight 2 weeks, 140. He went right, cut the weight down to 140. So yeah, that's why he was so good.
Now you see a lot of traditional karate style in MMA now, where a lot of these guys are learning how to fight a different way and throws people off with like front leg side kicks, wider stances that hopping
in. Is it Wonder Boy who fights like
that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you don't see that in Muay Thai.
Well, talk about Tenshin, the kid from Japan, the new kid who is brilliant. That southpaw I love.
How do you say his last name? Natsukawa.
Natsukawa, yeah. And
he's fucking amazing.
There's two actually. There's him and Takaru, and they won't let him fight. They're the same weight. Takaru's just won the K1. I think it's 60 kilo or something. He's gone up.
Yeah, we showed
weight.
A video of Takaru sparring the other day, knocking.
Oh yeah, you sent me that. Yeah.
Horrible, right?
Yeah, it's horrible. But you know, Tenshin came originally from karate. He was doing karate as a kid.
And the thing is, he's been knocking out ties as well because he's unpredictable and you don't know what's coming.
So fast as well.
Yeah. If you can get that balance and in Muay Thai scoring, it's going to be a bit difficult. Yeah. But for K1,
it's going to be beautiful. Yeah. But there's so many different kids. There's Moroccan kids coming from Infusion at the minute that are just, you know, I'm like, wow, he's amazing. It's just there's
a kid. Tension's only 18, right? Maybe 19 now?
Yeah, we have a fighter called Haruli. From Holland, and he's sparring, you know, that kid you've seen, the 18-year-old Tyson Haruli.
Oh, Tyson,
Nabil Haruli, and just knocking blokes spark in them is just like, there's some dangerous boys about. I'm so glad I'm old. I am so glad. Don't hit the old fella.
It is amazing how combat sports, just like kind of any other sport, they just, the new talent just learns from the old ways, yeah, and they get better and better. Mm. I mean, it's just there's better talent today.
It's just evolving and evolving all the time.
In MMA in particular, because it's such a recent sport. I mean, yeah, MMA's really only been around, like, popular since the 1993, somewhere around there. So if you look at, like, 1993 MMA versus 2018, it's like a fucking light years difference. But Muay Thai, it's more incremental, right?
Yeah.
It's better, but not as much better.
No.
The Westerners are. They're coming on so much quicker out than now.
Yeah, and I just think it's the opportunities that are getting thrown at them now with, like, the likes of Yokal, the likes of, you know, other promotions that are bringing them through. And we've just got some really good, like Daniel McGowan and his last performance he fought, and he's going to go and live in Pechendee now. He's sponsored by them. He was absolutely superb. But we've got some, I'm very proud of our country when it comes to Muay Thai. I'm very, very and proud of it, because I've been in the days where, even before Liam, I've been at 34 years, I've been involved in it, and just seeing Thais come over and beat the shit out of people. Like we're like, hooray, and they're, oh, fuck, and they're getting proper levered. The likes of this man here and the likes of other people are giving us a better chance. You know, so the fights are more competitive. And Thais are starting to train. They train for Liam. Like, they train for him. Like, I know that Malai Pet trained solidly for Liam when he fought him on...
He'd never trained. He trains 1 week for a fight, don't he? But he was telling me before, I've trained 2 months for this. I've trained 2 months, so...
Where'd you fight him on? What card?
Lion Fight.
It was Lion Fight,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I beat him on points on Lion Fight.
Oh, I saw that fight.
Yeah.
That was fun. That was a good fight. Yeah.
Kept sweeping him.
Yeah. That was a good fight.
One judge gave it fucking 50-46 to him.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it Adelaide Bird?
I think so.
Adelaide.
Yeah. So Lion Fight hasn't had a fight in a long time. I haven't heard anything. They used to be with Access TV, but I don't think they are anymore.
They're working with MTGP. It's run by Kieran Kettle, who's with the one, the MTK.
Yeah, they're bringing MMA it into England. Starting out, aren't they?
Yeah.
Do they have an American outlet anymore?
I actually don't know.
Fuck, they need something in America.
Because they were big, weren't they, as well, at one point? Like,
yeah.
They were, you know, like, Access TV is Mark Cuban's network, and it's they've got a lot of great fights on it. They've always had, like, a real good, strong Muay Thai and combat sports.
It needs to get all the yuck out of it.
Yeah, and, well, they have, Pat Miletich is doing commentary for MMA this weekend with that. But it's just, they're missing, you know, the wide distribution of, like, a Fox or FS1 or things that have gotten the UFC so popular.
Yeah.
They've got two standout fighters as well, really. I think they need more standout fighters to get their fighters, like, on big shows abroad. Like, they've got Kevin Ross, obviously the shilling as well, but he's more at MMA and K1. And Ongen Topic, and they're like the two that anyone says about, do you know Muay Thai in America?
Right.
Ross, Topic. They're the two that come straight up.
Well, shilling is, they're all fighting
Bellator now. They're champions at Bellator.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, it's great. I'm a big fan of Bellator kickboxing, but again, it's kickboxing. It's not Muay Thai.
Yeah, I prefer to watch Kevin fight Muay Thai because he's good with his sweeps. He's good with his elbows. He likes to go to war, so it's exciting to watch him do that.
Yeah.
K1, like you say, it limits what a Muay Thai fighter can do.
Yes.
We've got an English girl called Iman Barlow, who's Enfusion champion as well, and she's a Lion Fight Muay Thai champion. She's won 10 world titles. She's had 140 fights, and she's been fighting since she was 4.
What?
Hasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's from the Assassin's Gym in Leicester, trained by her dad, Mark Barlow.
There's a clip of her, I think.
Quality.
Yeah,
have you seen it where she kicks 10 times, girl, 9 times in a row?
Go bam, 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 and everyone lands. Left, right.
What is her name?
Iman Pretty Killer Barlow.
Spell that.
Iman is I-M-A-N, like I-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Barlow, yeah.
Iman Barlow, B-A-R.
She talks like that, it comes from Leicester.
Is that how they talk from Leicester?
She'll batter me when she sees me. But she's a great fighter.
Where's your accent, you guys? Is this Liverpool?
I live in Liverpool, but I'm originally from Manchester.
So what is the difference to your accent and a Liverpool accent?
I talk very posh compared to Liverpool.
Did you?
Scousers talk like that. He talk like weh.
Yeah, like till.
My wife, Lisa's right a Scouser, yeah.
Is this the one?
Yeah, it's not the fire.
Oh, damn. That's serious.
I think it's Marina's waiver there.
Boom, head kick.
Oh, to the body and then to the head. Yeah. Damn. Yeah,
boom.
Fuck. Yeah, that's the thing about legs, man. I mean, every woman that weighs 130 pounds is carrying 130 pounds around all day with their legs.
Yeah.
Try walking around on your hands all day.
Yeah.
Women can knock you the fuck out.
She's only small, man, though, isn't she? What's she, 115?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, she's only small.
She's sound, though, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's a really nice.
It's
like
unheard of, though, for a girl to have 100-plus fights. It's ridiculous, really, when you think about it, but she's still smashing it. And she's won about 96%.
Yeah, she has, yeah.
Well, how old are you now, Liam?
32.
So you're still in your prime right now?
I think so, yeah. I mean, my last 10 fights, I've probably won 8. The 2 losses have been on points, one to Fabio Pinker, top-level operator, and another one, and to another French boy, we're both on points. But all my fights in between that, I've either knocked them out or stopped them. And I feel when I'm training and when I'm fighting, I feel like I'm in prime. I feel like I'm stronger than ever. I feel like I'm faster than ever and sharper than ever. I've still got the hunger. I'm still really wanting to fight all the time. It's all I'm concentrating on, as well as I'm training others as well. But my sole intention is still... I've still got goals. That's the thing. Like, I know I've had a lot of fights and stuff, but I've still got goals that I want to achieve and I want to do. And
like, what are the...
Well, I won the WBC title in 2015, and you can see I've got a metal plate in my hand there. I broke my hand, and they didn't even give me a chance to just strip me of the belt straight away. They didn't give me a chance to say, right, wait a few months, defend. We can defend it then. They just stripped me of it, and now other people have won it and stuff. So I want to win that belt back, and I don't even know if I'm allowed to say this.
Surgery in your hand, they just stripped you?
Yeah, they just took it off me, yeah.
Why'd they do that?
I don't know. I think they wanted the French boy who I were meant to defend against to fight for it, because it was in France. So they let him fight for it, and then he won it and stuff. But now I think the title's vacant or something. I think the champion's moved up weight. It's become vacant again. I probably shouldn't be saying this, but I am fighting for it later on in the year against a real, real strong fighter as well. I don't think it's been released, so I'm not allowed to say it, but it's going to be probably one of the biggest fights Britain's seen in a long time. So obviously I've got that looking forward to. In July, massive fight. I'm defending my UK number one spot. I've been looking forward to this for ages. I've been number one in UK for about 13 years, and now there's a lot of talk about a guy, Charlie Peters, number two in the rankings, climbed his way up, had some big wins, earned his shot. He's got the whole country divided. It's north, east, south. I'm from Leeds, which is up north. He's from London, which is down south, so he's got the country divided. He's earned his shot, so I'm really looking forward to that.
That's a bit of a grudge match.
Yeah, you could say that.
A bit of shit-talking going on
there. Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit.
I'm fucking useless at shit-talk, though. I like throw an insult out there, and it just don't even make no sense, and I just go, what the fuck have I just done there? Do you know what I mean? And I just look a complete idiot. So.
It's funny, man. Are you either good at that shit, or you're not?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Conor's got a gift.
Yeah.
You know? Conor McGregor.
Yeah, he's got Till's good at it as well. Yeah. Louis Leo, I mentioned earlier, he's good at it. I'm fucking useless, so I just keep my mouth shut.
So where's the best way that most people can watch you fight? Like, a lot of these fights, you're going to have to watch them after the fact in America, right?
Most of them do come straight onto YouTube. Or some of
and Yokao puts them on, put them on their YouTube channel?
Yes.
And is it just Yokao? Y-O-K-K-A-O?
Yeah, just on here. Yeah, I mean, mainly that's the one that Liam fights on. There's a lot. I commentate on them a lot, which I'm very privileged to do. But yeah, I mean, there's other outlets. If you type in Liam in YouTube, whatever, they can watch him.
I love the way you commentate, because you always say something and you say, isn't he? Like, he's winning, isn't he? Beautiful.
That was a great
kick,
performance, wasn't it?
Yeah, like, that's an English thing, man. You say something, but then you also want everybody to agree with you.
But I think it's kind of I'm quarter Welsh. And the Welsh do that, so maybe that's a DNA thing.
I mean,
it's a polite
thing.
I do it all the time, though. I say, oh, you were good in wanting.
Me and you were like that all the time. It was good that wanting.
You just did it then. Me and you are like that all the time, aren't we?
Well, I noticed that when I was in England, just having conversations with people, that's like a speech pattern that people do over there. Yeah.
I learn something new every day.
But I first heard you when you were doing It's Showtime, when you're doing commentary. I remember hearing that. Like, this guy always does that. He always says that after.
Guys, some of the things, I mean, there was one fight where Mohamed Kamel and Mossab Amrani, and I go, fucking bananas. And looking back at it now, I'm thinking, but they loved it. The Dutch said, yes, we like you screaming like bitch.
Yeah.
So you do it. You have squeaky voice. It makes the fight exciting.
Great Dutch accent.
Dankjewel. So I spend that much time in Holland anyway. But thanks for that.
They're the real pioneers, right, when it comes to like expanding into Muay Thai and kickboxing. Yeah. Well, how did that happen? Like, the Dutch, it was a Kyokushin base originally, right?
Yeah. I mean, you've got to thank people like Johan Voss, Tom Haring, and another, Jan Plas. Voss trained Ivan Hippolyte, Ernesto Hoost, Shakariki, Dad Bader from the beginning, Peter Ertz, etc. And they're the pioneers. And then, but now they've got so many good gyms coming through and so many kids that they had, it's like they fight like you've stole something from them. You know, they just blitzkrieg each other. And
they're like the Thai version of the Thais in Thailand. Yeah. The Moroccans and the Dutch are there, like in K1, they're that version. So hard to beat at that sport.
I know Liam loves Muay Thai, and you know I try and talk to Liam about kickboxing and he just gets annoyed, but it's true though, isn't it? Like,
you get annoyed at kickboxing?
I don't get annoyed at it.
It's just Muay Thai.
You don't watch kickboxing?
I will if Vinny says watch this fight, it's amazing. Yeah. I watch it. I won't go out of my way to watch it. I don't know, I just don't.
Isn't that interesting?
He's very staunch.
He likes what he likes and that's it, you know.
Well, that's a big thing with a lot of Americans, you know, when it comes to, like, I've tried to show American fight fans Muay Thai, even like good buddies of mine, how the fuck can you not like this?
Yeah, it's what people like, isn't it? It's like,
I used to like watch boxing, but now I've been watching like movement specialists. You know, I've been doing all that movement and stuff. I've started doing
movement
it.
Movement specialists, like Ido Portal,
I train with a guy called Dan Mitten now, and he's a student of Ido Portal. And I like watching that. I find myself just sat there watching men swinging around in rings.
To be fair,
you know what that's called? It's called menopause. Like,
is
when
it?
Your balls start working.
Yeah, that's definitely
to be fair, though.
Definitely true of me.
I worked with Dan not long back, and some of the stuff he does is amazing.
He's
especially
class.
For Muay Thai, like obviously your hip flexors and stuff like that are working all the time. Mm-hmm. Some of like the different stuff that he was doing. Obviously, I get really tight around my hips and stuff when I'm kicking all the time. And some of the stuff that he showed me and we worked with, it were unbelievable. I felt so much looser.
Yeah, we loved that guy.
Yeah.
Have you ever done any yoga?
No, I did hot yoga once and I nearly died. I don't think I'll do that one again. Well, but I should do, to be fair. But I think now that I found Dan and all the different stuff that he showed me, I think that can replace any sort of yoga I should be doing, because this stuff is amazing.
Well, I think it would be a good compliment to your style, because your style is so fucking you're so like tense and powerful that I would think that like maybe that would like open you up a little bit, make you a little bit more loose.
That stuff that Dan does, it does it like it's opening, using different joints and stuff, mm-hmm. and putting me in positions that I'm not used to. And to be fair, it is hard, but after you've done it and after you've done the workout and stuff that he's shown you, you feel loose and you feel amazing. It's brilliant. It's really,
it's horrific.
Really good.
I go every Wednesday morning and I don't want to go. I'll fucking tell you the truth. I'm driving down there. It's an hour away from me. And I'm thinking, fuck this. And then I get there and it's just it's just a very, very special dude.
How illegal is weed in England?
I'm not into it, me.
Listen, bro. Take two solid hits and then go to yoga class.
Yeah, if I took two solid hits, I'd be hiding around back of my sofa, I'm telling you. It's not for
especially
me.
Especially American weed.
Yeah.
Get a hold of some of this California shit. You'll be in an orbit.
Serious paranoia.
Two hits and then go to a yoga class. It's like you're on a journey. You're like, you get out of there an hour and a half later, it's perfect. Because an hour and a half into the sweating, the pot's worn off. And you like, you come back down, but in the middle of it, you feel like the world's going to end any second now. In the middle of the class, like, there's no way this could be sustainable. There's no way I'm not going to survive. The whole world, you just think about everything that's going on.
Kevin Tracy, get on with Joe, we're like a house on fire. That's my mum and dad. Not me, I can't do it. Don't agree with me.
I love it for yoga. It's one of my favorite things ever. Take two hits and go to yoga class.
But the thing is, when you're stoned, you can't not be unstoned quick. You're just like, oh shit,
right.
Gotta wait for it to wear off.
No, there's no wearing off quick. Yeah. Well, caffeine helps a little bit.
Does
coffee.
It?
Yeah,
I remember
coffee.
Jordan gave me a drop of cannabis oil before and I like melted into his sofa for about 6 hours and I couldn't move and I'm thinking, I'm dead. I'm done here.
Last time I was here, I had some and I had some cannabis oil and I was sat there watching TV. And then I was like, fucking hell, are those mine? and then I got the remote control from the TV and this guy was going, no, 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 and I turned him over and I went, ha, to me fucking self. And then I knew, it's not for you, this.
Well, it's just one of those things, like anything else, you got to ease into it. You got to understand what you're doing.
Joe was into stone.
Yeah. I like it for just relaxation and reflection, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's also great for, like, pain management. And, like, you know, after you're done training, everything's sore, your shoulders, your elbows.
Yeah, well, my mum and dad, they both love it, but I've just never been able to. I remember I tried two drags before and I nearly had a fucking paranoia attack. I just had to go hide.
You got
to
dig a little one. But those are.
But
those
I'm the type of guy that I'm all or nothing. You know what I mean? So
yeah, like, I'm sure.
Yeah, with every aspect. So
yeah, if you approach pop the way you approach Muay Thai, that could be
big
a real fucking
big mistake. Yeah.
And I tried holding pads for him. I was holding pads for him the other day, and I said, "Right, just bang, bang, just bang." Okay, just bang it then.
So you're trying to like get him to settle down, and he.
Yeah,
just...
I mean, I'm. No, nowhere near the level of his coach. I just hold pads in the way that I can. I'm more of a boxing, holding pads for boxing, because there's no way. I've held pads for Jordan Watson, and I am not holding pads. I'm not experiencing that again. I'm an old man, and I'm not holding pads for him.
Jordan kicks twice as hard as me as well. His kicks are absolutely ridiculous. He'd probably break straight through that machine out there.
Yeah, it's an absolute, to get him in here.
Absolute nightmare holding pads for him.
I'm sure. Yeah, I've seen him fight. Yeah. I saw him fight Giorgio too. Got caught with that crazy hook.
Yeah, it was a fatal mistake that.
Yeah,
you know, Giorgio Petrosian's got such good eyesight that he's just I knew about him years before.
About 15 years ago.
Yeah, this kid. My boxer fought him, and we went in and we heard about this kid. Oh, Giorgio Petrosian was like, right, whatever. Yes, he's unbeaten. Blah blah blah. I thought, fuck off. They're just trying to scare you. Don't worry. My boxer went out. He was a great fighter himself. Rick Barner, lovely kid. Got his own gym, and fought. Blah blah blah. Slipped. Got caught. Dropped. Body shot, then he got up again, body shot, leg kick, bang. And he come back and he said, I could have done this, I could have done that. I said, you fucking couldn't.
I'll tell you what, the most
this kid's special.
Impressive thing about him as well, because I used to watch the videos that Vinny used to send me, and I think, oh, well, he looks all right. I commentated with Vinny once live on him, and I just saw the subtle stuff that he does up close, you know, the little slips, the little step off from southpaw, and I just said to Vinny, I'd like took the mic away, I went, this is fucking unreal. Just the subtle stuff, which is what makes him a level above anyone else. He's the greatest K1 fighter of all time.
Yeah, and I mean, what he does is negates your rhythm. So you, like when the Dutch fight mainly in combination. They fire fast hands, fast kicks. They fire them straight away. But he negates that first shot. And then he'll step off, so he can't reach him.
Again. He puts that right palm out.
Yeah.
He fights southpaw, puts that right palm out, and he throws a lot of teep kicks off that right front leg.
And he's strong as well. I think he's deceptively strong. He's Armenian. He's not actually Italian. His real name's Gevorg. They call him Giorgio Petrosian, but his real name's Gevorg. They changed it because it's more palatable for the Italians.
Oh.
But he's a very, very special individual.
So technical.
Yeah.
A really interesting guy to watch him train too.
Yeah, I love watching him on pads. Nothing's done over hard or anything. It's all just done perfect.
Yeah,
every shot is perfect.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, and again, like everybody's got their own style. Yeah, that's one of the beautiful things about Muay Thai is that like the art is very straightforward. You have your eight weapons, but it's like how you apply those is all based on creativity, your own personal preferences.
Yeah, that's the great thing about like when you watch the top Thais in Thailand, you'll have a technician. But then you'll have a big clincher, and they might be getting the floor wiped with them outside the clinch, but as soon as they grab hold and they start banging them big knees in and stuff, it's going to make the fight a lot more interesting. It's then the technician's job to keep him off, to teep, to move, to score with the kicks. That's what the great thing about Muay Thai. That's why I love it so much.
Well, that's why I think it's the best striking style, is because it incorporates so much grappling.
Yeah.
There's so much sweeps and clinch and knee work and controlling the back of the neck. And, you know, it's just... It's so effective to take that out. Like, when I watch a boxing match and they're like, break. I'm like, why are you breaking?
Yeah.
Go back and watch old Jack Johnson fights. You ever watch old Jack Johnson fights?
I've never seen
Jack Johnson. Yeah, locking
horns. Clinch the shit out of
everybody.
Boxing. Clinch everybody.
Well, Matt Skelton
wear
did, didn't
out.
He? Matt Skelton used to, that was a heavyweight from England. And he used to clinch. But I've since been working with Liam and doing the seminars that we've been doing. I've been doing it a long time. And I'm watching him and I'm going, I didn't know that. And it's been brilliant for me to fall in love with Muay Thai again. Because you'll see what he does in it. I didn't know that.
Well, there's so much to boxing, right? I mean, when you see a guy like a Floyd Mayweather or a real technician like Lomachenko, just there's so much to learn. Now add leg kicks, knees, head kicks, elbows, clinch, all this other stuff. I mean, Muay Thai is almost never ending.
I say all the time, I've been training nearly 20 years and I learn every day. Every day I will learn just something new, whether it's from someone in the gym who I've been sparring, whether it's from my coach Richard, whether it's from a YouTube video, watching a fight in Thailand or something. I'm still learning every single day. And I remember my trainer from Thailand, Jay, when I was living there, he was saying, I'm 50 years old, I've been doing this 40 years. He said, I learn every day as well.
That's amazing.
It's never, it's never ending. That's why I'm in love with it so much.
Yeah, jiu-jitsu is very similar. But
I could imagine,
I
could imagine MMA being exactly the same, with the wrestling, the jiu-jitsu, everything.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that on the outside, you don't see it. But the closer you get to it, the more you realize, like, wow, this thing is like never ending.
Yeah. And it's, and you know what? I'll be honest, I've not met anyone that I'd really dislike in it. They're all pretty decent, aren't they? Nice people.
Yeah,
you meet and they knock fuck out of each other and they're like, cheers.
Well, talk about a character developer.
Yeah.
I mean, what develops your character more than combat sports?
Yeah, that's
true. I mean, you find out who the fuck you are.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we'll come back about to what we, I was saying earlier. You find out who you are. Some people think, fuck this, that ain't me. Other people say, fuck yeah, let's do that again. That, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's that. All the best fighters are all the most best people you're going to meet as well, I think. Like, look at how much of a gentleman Petrosian is.
Absolutely. Do you know what's funny about the fight with Jordan and Petrosian? They're very similar characters. They're very, very nice people. I mean, Jordan is an absolute... You wouldn't think Jordan was a fighter.
I met him, super sweetheart.
Lovely guy. And all right, and but, you know, and then, like, at the end of the fight with Giorgio and Petrosian, Petrosian runs over and puts his head on him. Because he hugs him.
Yeah.
Because I think like attracts like, and I think he understood that. It was a fight. Once it's over, the bells ring. You know, I said to him, because I messaged Giorgio Petrosi, he said, you punched another one of my friends, whatever. Congratulations, but don't hit another one of my friends. They'll have me to deal with, as if he's fucking scared. Like it matters. And he said, oh, no, he kicked hard. He kicked really hard. He kicked very, very hard. So he was still respectful, you know.
He's
a good guy.
Well, listen, let's wrap this up. Liam, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
It's my honor. And thank you for training with me, too. That was beautiful.
No problem.
That was awesome for me, man. And people could find you on Twitter at Liam_Badco.
Yeah, get me on my Instagram. That gets updated. All my
Did I say Twitter? I meant Instagram.
Yeah, my Instagram. All my training clips, everything I put up, post on there. All my fights, all my seminars, all my upcoming stuff that I'll be doing with Vinny will all be thrown onto there.
Yeah, and Vinny Shorman, you're on Instagram as well with a Y, Vinny, V-I-N-N-Y, Shorman.
Yeah, and vinnyshorman.com. Get hold of me. We'll see what happens.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks, Joe.
Awesome.
Cheers, man. Thank you very much.
Oh, I enjoyed that.